Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
どこいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ。どこにいるのかな。ね、見えない。
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint Radio, episode negative one.
E3 negative one.
It is June 10th, 2018, and again, we are 2 days before E3 starts proper, so we're at negative one, day negative one.
The way AKA day two.
That makes me tired.
Yeah.
I'm tired as you talk about it.
Today is the day that Bethesda and Microsoft mm-hmm. and Devolver got on stage as well. Devolver hit play on a video.
They got on stage.
Of a fictional character.
Well, a lot of press conferences, although they take place live, are a yes. lot of hitting play on a yes. video. So let's not give them too much credit.
Fair. I'm going to move my seat around. There we go. Now I'm better. We should start at the beginning of the day and just start digging in, because there's a lot.
We can't talk about our beginning of our day.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't. We did something. Yeah, we did. I mean, there's a lot of things. That's the part of E3 we're at. You want to know what part of E3 we're at is we all had meetings today that we can't even talk about yet because it's not Tuesday or it's not Monday at 1:15 p.m. or
right.
whatever.
The E3 embargoes have not.
We're in the big shot insider zone.
That's right. The shit you don't even know about. I mean, the thing that actually happened today that
like
was
this.
Funny was like, We walked into a place for an appointment to see, and we'll talk about this in the future, mm-hmm. Shadows Die Twice, Sekiro, and they were like, well, you can't talk about this game yet because it isn't announced, or like, the embargo was like for 3 p.m. or something. It's like, we just watched the announcement.
There's a very good moment where, so the Microsoft press conference started at 1, our appointment to go see Sekiro, which we can say we saw it,
yes.
We cannot talk about what we saw, we can only talk about the trailer they showed. It's a weird snake rabbit hole. But we like the PR person was like, "Oh, what are you here to see?"
And
like,
a weird snake.
They're showing a couple different things.
Yeah, weird snake. That's okay. The game.
Snake. Well, there was a snake in Sekiro.
That's true. There was a weird snake.
And they were like, "What are you here to see?" I was like, "Oh, we're here to see Sekiro." And the lady was like, "What?" Like, you know, to them that game is not announced.
How do you know the name of that? Yeah.
Like,
oh, it just.
I was like,
just,
"Oh, we're watching the press conference." Yeah. Oh, right.
Exactly. I guess actually we can start a little bit before, because one of the things that I do just want to set the stage for was the degree to which the last 24 hours in this apartment, from the point that we stopped recording yesterday's podcast till we got to Microsoft starting, was just like a slow fever build. Actually, even before we did the podcast yesterday, mm-hmm. there's rumors and leaks and bubblings and sources contacted us with little insights. As all that stuff started to happen, we started to really confirm that Microsoft was going to have a very big, very packed, very games-focused show, very forward-looking show, a show that I think a lot of people would be excited about. But we didn't know a lot of the details. And so this place turned into a fucking conspiracy theory. It was like the Zapruder film in here.
Well, because what starts happening is like people, like sources start going to dinners. You like
yes.
people like get together. They start like bullshitting. Like, oh, I've heard this. I've heard that.
Well, it couldn't be this because I'm close to that person. They would tell
the
me.
The red crayons start to come out.
100%.
And then, well, yeah, because then it's like, okay, I got a bit of information from this person. I'm going to shoot this over to that person mm-hmm. and see if we can fill in some other blanks. And
I spent a lot of time on Wikipedia yesterday looking at the list of every games publisher and studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had heard in advance, at least I can say, that like there was acquisition talk
yes.
with Microsoft, and we were trying to figure out exactly where some of that stuff fell. I would love to share some of our theories, like some of the stuff we were talking about, but we can't because if some of that stuff is still happening,
right.
then I'm not in a position to talk about
it
that.
It was like some Nathan Drake versus Master Chief level, like, shit.
Yep.
Is where we were
yep.
at.
Yeah.
Like, we
yep.
were,
and I it was think, the nerdiest, like, this Waypoint has gone to some places.
Yes.
And then the places we were going yesterday were, we were writing fan fiction,
yes,
executive 100%. Level fan fiction in real time in a way that was very
fun. We can
fun.
Say that there was a point at which I dreamt up that a major game developer would literally come on stage and rip a t-shirt off to reveal a second t-shirt underneath
yep.
that would have surprised everybody. That
yeah,
didn't happen.
There was at some point where I pitched that Phil Spencer was going to come out, reveal a PlayStation 4, and beat it with a sledgehammer.
That's true. I did. That's
and there
right.
was a reason
right.
that all made sense.
Uh-huh. And so here's what I'll say broadly. in some ways, I think the Microsoft conference did that. But in lots of ways, and I'm, in ways that I'm really happy, it didn't need to.
Right.
The Microsoft conference was, here are a bunch of games that we think you'll like.
50 games.
50 games.
18 exclusives.
You have, you took notes.
I took very detailed notes.
You know what? Let me slow down really quick. Austin Walker, I'm here. Joining me, note taker herself, Danielle
Hello,
Riendo.
Hello, I'm Danielle Riendo, and I took notes.
The note taker. Also joining me from Chicago.
I run an ice cream shop now.
The ice cream shop maker scoops himself.
I don't know why we didn't go there.
Patty Clep.
We didn't know it was an ice cream shop.
Yeah. I heard, yeah, it was liquor in that ice cream.
I would have liked some ice cream. It was hot out today.
It's hot. Mm-hmm. We could go to the CVS.
We got extremely good. No, but like that sounds like good ice cream.
It sounds like good ice cream. And also, Rob, I don't have a nick. What's your nickname? What's your, like, this wrestling voice thing I'm doing? This, like, Robert.
What's a conspiracy?
I almost said Robert E. Lee, and I am sorry.
Oh, boy.
Guys, what's the first thing that comes after
I mean, look.
Robert Zachney.
He was a good commanding officer. That was about all he was.
Robert E. Lee Zachney. See, this is, you don't like that. That's bad.
Robert Rob Zachney.
Oh.
Ooh, spicy.
Nice.
Rob Zachney's here with us also. Also, Danica Herod on keyboard.
On the socials and
you know,
videos.
Actually, I'm not even sure he was a good commanding officer, if I'm being honest about that.
Kind of sucked.
On the ones and twos, Joel, Free Magic, Fowler. All right, so yeah, big picture. Microsoft had a good show. We should walk through this stuff, but as yesterday, curious what any major takeaways about strategy or feelings or vibe came to y'all via the show.
I mean, I remember when we were talking about how the different hardware manufacturers are going to handle these different... Danny was just showing her face in front of that phone.
Uh-huh.
I thought that Microsoft was going to be a little more forward-looking because they needed to start doing some like narrative shifts. They needed to start getting people to think about Microsoft in a different way.
Right.
Acquisitions are a great way to do that because you look at what a studio has created in the past, you can immediately get a picture for like what kind of interesting things they might do in the future. So, I mean, we'll get into specifics, but you know, you think of a Ninja Theory and all of a sudden you go, oh, this could mean XYZ for Microsoft. So I think that stuff was really smart.
And also announcing games that aren't out this year.
Right. So like Halo Infinite.
Which
like,
we'll talk about in a second.
I think there might have been three next-gen games announced today, right. To varying degrees. But that Halo Infinite. What's nice about that teaser is like if there's a forward-looking that at least gives you a sense of like what that thing is.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a nice sort of exciting thing. Like, I think they set the stage for what could be a much more interesting Microsoft. And like I'm curious to see what Microsoft is 5 years from now.
Totally.
A year ago, when I was thinking we were just going to get normal Halo 6. And, you know, Gears of War 5 and Gears Tactics. And we got some of those things.
We did.
But there were some fundamental shifts that happened today that makes me think the kind of decisions they're making, the kind of foundation they're laying for the future, I'm more interested in seeing what Microsoft is than I was in the past, like, by a really significant degree.
Danielle, how about you?
I was excited to see a couple of things. I mean, I don't want to be too specific, obviously, because this is a very broad question.
Yeah.
But I liked that there was breath there as well as depth. I liked that there was Ori on the stage, and that was really cute, and it was really pretty. It was really awesome. I liked that there was a free Don't Nod game that looked kind of interesting and weird.
So that game is actually... That game is apparently like a prequel to Life is Strange 2.
Okay.
And there's going to be hints for Life is Strange 2.
Okay, even better.
In that. Like, that's what the press release was saying. So
even better. So that's awesome. As well as all the sort of like as the well big Gears guns, et cetera, et cetera.
Whatever.
Exactly. Right. Like, I liked that it actually made a lot of time for that sort of stuff. So I liked that. That was cool.
Awesome. Rob.
I mean, I liked it a lot overall. I think the thing that I really came away thinking a lot about was Xbox Game Pass. And like, if I didn't have a job where, like, review code is often pressed into my hands at, like, various times in the year. And,
most
like,
games you can get.
There's some rare exceptions. There's a handful that I'm interested in, that I'll have to buy. One of those was State of Decay 2. Not happy about them.
Should have given you my code.
Congratulations to everybody Microsoft acquired. Except, no.
No,
congratulations to everybody.
That's a good acquisition. Anyway, but, we'll talk.
Yeah. But... if I didn't, like, do this job professionally, like, Xbox Game Pass is something I would 100% be doing at this point.
There was a moment when we were at the Xbox hands-on showcase where they had a bunch of games to play where I looked up and they just had the thing that was, like, 100 games on Xbox Game Pass. And there was just, like, the list of them were scrolling by.
They just added Fallout 4 or 3?
Fallout 4.
Four.
Spelunky. is on that list.
Fall 3 might already be there. I don't know.
A bunch of games on the list. I looked up and I was like, there are some good fucking video games.
You need to spend a long ass time. $10? Like, that's a pretty good value proposition.
That's a very good value proposition. And especially when now we can think about the Xbox One X especially as being a particularly strong console that can play all that stuff as well, if not better than anything else in the market outside of like a very high-end PC. But some of those Xbox Game Pass games would just be fine on an Xbox. You know what I mean? Like, they'll all be good enough.
Especially, backwards compatibility
stuff.
Even
Fallout 4, which played like shit on the Xbox One, probably okay on the... I haven't played it, so I can't vouch. I guess for me, the big one is like, you know, we talked last week, we talked on Friday about how the show is a big...
That was 2 days ago.
I know. How the show is a big, you know, it's a big industry marketing event. Like, that's what it is, for better and worse, and I often get bummed out by that. It's a dog and pony show, it can be exhausting. But I am interested in... There's a part of me that's partially academic and partially just kind of like, I like a good story. That's a thing I like. And I like seeing people play the great game. I like seeing people figure out how to pitch themselves, how to sell to an audience. I grew up working retail. I mean, my dad's a salesman. I've always loved figuring out, how do you have a thing that you think is worth something and you convince someone else that it's worth it too, and they should buy in, whether that means giving you money or that just means investing. And so over the last day, it has been really interesting. And then this morning, as we're walking around the area and seeing people dressed in like Microsoft, whatever, like community day, fan day shirts or whatever, with the scarves, seeing how they were playing the game that they'd been losing for years. And I don't mean that in a "you lost E3, bruh, you suck" sense. I mean that in the sense that, like, those posts go get written because you didn't appeal to this audience in the right way. And I'm not saying that you should always appeal to the audience the right way.
Right.
You should draw lines. You should stand for something. You should say no to a bunch of gamer bullshit. But it is also fascinating to me to see them figure it out, and also to see them figure it out in a way that Sony's been moving away from. Right? Like, we know that Sony isn't inviting fans to, like, a big, at least a huge amount of fans to their event tomorrow. Microsoft filled that place. And there's a world in which they fill that place and then, like, they don't deliver, and it's just embarrassing. Or it's not mic'd right the way the EA event was.
Right.
And it's embarrassing. And instead they filled it, and then they had the room read and they delivered.
And you know that was, like, legit enthusiasm, because there was a laugh line early in that Microsoft presentation that just died in the most delicious way. It was when Todd Howard came out, and just like, you know, "Hey, you know, Phil told me we're having a few friends over. Why don't you drop by?"
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Just like a long beat of just like stony silence.
Usually you have some employees who are like, yeah, Todd.
Nice work.
Nailed it.
Just none of those people, even the people like wearing, like just covered in Xbox like shirts.
Right.
And, like,
what's like nobody. Last year we were making fun of those people because they had the... You know, I witnessed the most powerful console of all time.
That was bad.
Which was bad. And yet, somehow, it turned out all right this time.
You know.
There's an interesting arc to EA, to Microsoft,
to Bethesda,
to Devolver.
Like,
purely in terms of, like, how you manage communities, expectations, like, how you do a presentation, how you manage the fact that you are... a capitalist corporate structure, like trying to come across as authentic, and how you sell authenticity, and like how you, even in selling authenticity, how you do that in an authentic way. You know, I mean, like they're just so varying. Like, Devolver does it by basically saying, like, "Fuck you, you slobs! Like, here's your fucking video piece games. Of shit video game assholes." Like, and that's a way. I don't think it was
particularly effective, but
it's a strategy, and there's a version of that works really well.
Totally.
It's probably 5 minutes and not 20 minutes.
Yes,
was actually probably the mistake they made. But I think, Bethesda has sort of like raw enthusiasm that is like, you know, we'll get to the last like 10 minutes of like their whole thing. Really, the last like 30 minutes of their thing, from Fallout 76 on, was like a masterclass in sort of like how you deal with fans' expectations, and like it was just really fascinating to think of all of those as an arc of different studios failing and succeeding in different ways in dealing with exactly what we're talking about.
Totally. All right, let's dig in. We're going to do the Microsoft thing. We'll take a break, and we'll come back and do Bethesda and Devolver, and then we'll call it a night. Nice, easy lift. You know, it's already whatever time it is.
It's 8:40. Early.
It's early. It's early. Thank you. That's what I need. That, you know what? Give me a high five.
That's that energy.
That's that energy.
Good job, Robert Zach.
I'm trying to give... I tried to give a high five earlier today.
And oh, it was bad.
Did you leave him to die?
It was like
die?
You and Pat Gill. No, it was like, it was Pat Klepek and Pat, Pat Gill. The Pats.
It was a Pat.
And they tried to like handshake, high five. It was,
well, no, like there was some miscommunication on the hands.
You end up like just holding hands, like interlacing your fingers.
We kind of just ended up doing like a...
Yeah.
Oh, like, boy. That's worse Austin than just holding
shakes
hands.
He just shakes his head and he's just like, white people.
It was bad. It was bad.
Not wrong.
But no, he was not wrong.
It was not wrong.
I should have just walked away.
You should have. That should have been it. Halo Infinite was announced at the top of the Microsoft show. They showed Master Chief's helmet, and they zoomed out, and it was green, and there was a Halo.
Is that Battle Royale?
No.
No, no, no. This is a... Well, they're not saying. They're like, all right. I've heard little tidbits about what that might be, but they're not really saying much about it, except right. that it's a... like the they put up a blog post that was like, we have... like, heard your... one, we've heard your concerns about, like, not playing as Master Chief. Like, this game is going to be about Master Chief. But I don't know. I think you look at what they showed, and it was a big open space, yeah. which is different than Halo levels, which are not corridors. They're not tight. But, like, they're traditional stage. Like, right. It's possible to look at that and start... your imagination starts wondering, like, what would they do with a giant open space? And right. like, you know,
which is something that is in the history of the art, of the franchise to some degree. You think about some of those early levels in Halo 1.
What's that first? The first level?
Once you get up the hill and like get the warthog.
Yeah, but that what is that first level called in Halo 1?
What the fuck it's called? It's been too long since you look.
You're on the beach.
You're on the beach. I know.
Beach.
Anyway, so that first area, yeah. like. There is, when you think about actually like the way that map goes, yes. it's a big ass map. You go in places, you're coming out of places, you're like
defend
going.
That fortress. You yeah, exactly. There's that whole thing.
It's like imagine making that like 1,000 times bigger,
right?
Or like whatever.
Or whatever, right? And
four times
or four times. Well, right. We'll get to Bethesda later when they said 4 times bigger. So yeah, so that's it, I'm glad it says infinite. I'm glad it doesn't say 6, which is
There was no. Those games were very competently made. Like, right. 4 was a new team following up on Bungie. Like, that is to recreate Bungie's combat, to make that feel good, is like no small order. That is a huge thing to do. And they did that in 4. And so I took away 4, it was kind of like a wash for me. It's like, all right, you've proved you can make it a Bungie. You proved you can make a Halo game that feels like a Halo game. And then I thought with 5, I was like, all right, now here's your time. Put your stamp on it. Like, do something different. 3-4-3.
Yeah.
And instead, 5 just, like, doubled down on, like, an extremely convoluted plot that, as someone that doesn't read the books, like, made no sense to me.
Forerunners. The Arbiter.
Cortana.
But the villain.
Cortana. Yeah, I don't
know. Four, they introduce a villain, at which point they don't name the villain. And I didn't know.
He has a cool name. It's not the Librarian. It's something like that.
Librarian's a good ass name.
Yeah, but
for
it's something. It's something like that, but like a fancier library.
The Guardian.
No, it's like it's about knowledge.
The Bibliotechnician.
It's like that.
That
it's
would
close.
Be a good.
The Bibliotechnician sounds like some fucking Bungie shit.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's like those games really they were competently made, became sort of like increasingly rote and just not particularly interesting. And so had they put out a Halo 6 that was just, we're gonna finish the story because.
Yeah,
that's what we're gonna do. And this one, Halo Infinite, they already said picks up after Halo 5 Guardians, so it's
Halo
like
6.
It is Halo 6.
But it's
but
the
just
fact that they're trying to communicate something by saying Infinite, which is like, all right, cool. All right, let's not say on this thing that we can't really talk about or don't know much about anyway.
I'm just saying I was not interested in another Halo game.
Yep.
I am now
interested,
like very interested in another Halo game, which says a lot. And it's a big bet, right?
I'm interested in the pitch. I want to see how they sell that thing in a year.
Yeah,
hopefully, maybe sooner. Who knows?
That's first of my maybe next gen games or game that straddles.
There's like 3 or 4, right?
Yeah.
On this list?
Yeah. Starfield, Elder Scrolls, and Halo Infinite, I think, are all. Halo Infinite is the closest to not being. I don't know where that will end up falling, but Starfield and Elder Scrolls.
Straddle.
Yeah.
Those are on.
Those feel very much like those games are coming in, you know, 2020. And
next up.
Yeah.
Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
Oh.
Talk to me about Ori. I played a little bit of it today. I think I can talk about it, but tell me what
you
thought.
Well, you should, because I haven't played it.
So I haven't played the original, at all.
It's a tremendous game.
Yeah.
It's so deeply overlooked, even though it was highly celebrated. It is one of...
Beautiful side-scrolling adventure. Like,
well, it's a Metroid-style game. Yeah, like it is absolutely one of the best of those. It is a gorgeous game with unbelievably good music, and specifically what's really tremendous about Ori, it's not just the fact that like you're unlocking... different tools and you go back to areas that you've been to before, it's a sense of momentum.
Yes.
Like Ori is a game where you can, if you're playing it right, you can just never touch the ground. They give you these great tools to just keep moving. And so I played through this 30-minute demo of the new game, and they just, there's just more of that. Like yeah.
I stopped playing it because I was like, I want to play this at home. I do. I really do. And you know, I'm not a platform person.
Well, there's a burrowing. Yeah. There's a burrowing mechanic. That was it. So there's actually you can dig.
That
don't worry.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way. But yeah, I mean, yes. That mechanic was the moment where I was like, oh. So there's a you can kind of create a drill and dig into sand and then like echo the dolphin pop out of it
with
a boost, which gives you more of a jump than you can get traditionally. So you can get up to higher platforms and get to places where you can grapple onto.
So the grapple's new. That's not in the original game. Okay. So they're like the two, like some of the big, like the big biggest mechanical change is like the introduction of this grapple where there are different points you can go onto and like. You can also grapple onto enemies, which like the demo doesn't explain, but the developer was explaining to me. He said like basically all their things are like trying to build on different ways for you to like not touch the ground.
Right.
Like they want momentum. Momentum is really what Ori is about. Like it's a very playful physics momentum based game,
yeah.
And there's just a lot more stuff happening with that. Where like once I was kind of getting the flow of it, I was diving under the sand, coming out of the sand, hitting the grapple and then like, you know, double jumping, but then also dashing. And it's right. just like, there's just, it's so much fun to play. It feels so good. And somehow this game is like prettier than the last one. The last one was gorgeous. And this one is, I mean, it's hard to articulate. It's really something you have to just go watch or experience yourself, but it's just, yeah. It's so pretty. And I'm really glad that they're making another one.
It wasn't me.
Yesterday.
It wasn't me.
It's always going to be Patrick.
It was almost me a moment ago.
I got to stop putting it in front of me because I did the exact same thing last time.
Danielle, someone
who my hands.
Has a cat named Ori.
Yes.
How important is this?
Extremely. Ori's the best cat and the best bat. Is it ever really said what kind of animal
Ori is?
Ori's kind of like a bat cat.
Well, bats can fly, so it can't be a bat.
Right, it just has those giant, like, it has like a wing-like ear kind of thing.
Right?
Like
it's an Ori.
It's an Ori. It's an Ori. It's a beautiful Ori. I'm really excited about it. The trailer showed a very, like, Fern Gully sort of thing going on.
Yeah.
Especially, like, Tim Curry in Fern Gully, which I know is a very specific reference, but, like, the smog guy monster thing.
Gotcha.
That was showing up, so I'm interested.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. So then we got the FromSoft game. We found out
there it is.
Why Shadows Die Twice. Tenchu Stealth Assassins.
Yes.
Basically. So.
Winnable. What's the t-shirt we saw?
Tenchu. Not Wrath of God.
It's 2003 Tenchu.
So this morning, Patrick and I were walking. We got out of the lift, sort of walking to the convention center to do another thing. And
Return from Darkness.
And we saw someone walking past us with a Tenchu Return from Darkness t-shirt.
Which we weren't 100% sure if it was an older Tenchu game.
That sounds familiar.
Or was like, did some Activision employee accidentally put on his like Tenchu shirt like for this week and he was not supposed to wear it? But no, it wasn't a Tenchu game.
So it's Sekiro Shadows Die Twice.
Yes.
Right? And it is a FromSoft action game. That again, we cannot talk about our demo, unfortunately.
The trailer kind of like, you know, explains a lot of the pillars of the game, which is verticality, which is
the
like
grapple
sword
hook.
Clashes, yeah, which is the grapple hook.
That arm has some cool stuff.
Yeah,
like the prosthetic arm.
It's like
a tool.
It's like some sort of like multi tool or, you know, like
the grappling hook and stuff.
Yeah. You know, the monster design looks very much like from
had
software.
That big weird snake.
As Big Snake, it's big and beautiful and like pretty in a way that is very different than From Software's aesthetic design for environments, which is usually like decaying. Like you're coming
somber.
Into places, and you're coming into places that like are in ruins or are dying or have died, and like that is more. That you're still getting it in the enemy design, but you're
these places feel alive.
They feel alive. They feel like, lived in.
Right.
Right. They feel like people are here living their lives, whereas in Dark Souls and Bloodborne, you feel like. Yeah, there might be people alive, but like they're not living.
They're living their deaths, sort of. They're undead. Yeah.
We'll see. We'll talk about it Tuesday.
But it looks really good. I'm excited. It
looks really good.
You know, it's what as much as I wanted a Bloodborne 2, what I actually like in my I wanted Bloodborne 2, but in my heart of hearts, what I wanted was like a Souls adjacent game. Like I wanted them to take I want to be rewarded for having played a Souls game before so I can jump in and like, okay, I know how this goes. But then they're going to push me to play in a different way and I'm excited to see how that stuff actually...
To try to paraphrase from last night, you wanted FromSoft to think as hard about a new game as they did about Bloodborne or as they did about Dark Souls, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, let's go back to the drawing board again, find out some new shit, and we'll see.
So if you played Dark Souls, A lot of that applies to Bloodborne, but you have to play in a different way.
Yep.
And it's like, that's fun that you can come to something new. And just watching
that trailer, you can kind of see that about
Sekiro. Yes, you can start seeing in your mind kind of how some of that stuff will ultimately play.
One thing I noticed, not to, because I obviously haven't seen it for real, I just saw that trailer.
Totally.
Looked like a lot more humanoid things. Obviously, there was the snake.
Yeah.
There's a few creatures, but like, you know, coming from Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3, those are the two I've played.
Sure.
It looked like actual people.
Humans. Yeah, it looked like human beings. Yeah. Exactly, which was interesting.
Yes,
so.
Not just like corrupt undead people, but
Or blood-starved beasts and such.
Right,
And I'm sure we'll see. We saw some monster-y things in that
trailer. Yeah, for sure,
You know, we'll see. Then Bethesda came out and said, Fallout 76. Todd Howard said, I heard you had friends coming over. And then they showed another Country Road Take Me Home trailer and continued to not pitch what that game is.
Song just keeps getting better.
Keeps getting better.
Well, at that point, I was getting, I had been up until my mind was sort of turned around with the way they ended up presenting the game actually at their own conference, but was continually irritated with the way they were talking about this game because I've seen Fallout 76 pop up in like my politics feed and like places where Fallout hits like such an enormous radius of people that goes so far beyond just like, people that, like, I play one game a year are, like, the kind of people that are, like, I'm so fucking excited for a new Fallout. And the way this game was talked about, where Todd Howard comes out and says, it's four times larger than Fallout 4. Well, motherfucker, you're not making Fallout 5. Don't give people the sense that you're making Fallout 5 unless you're making Fallout 5. And so I was getting nervous less for me because I wasn't as invested. Like, I'm kind of a little bit over Fallout to some degree. But I was, like, worried for other people. They're like, I know this game isn't what you think it is. And I'm worried that they were overselling it. And like at that point, I was really irritated that Bethesda had gone, at this point, like, what, 2 weeks? Where they were just being so coy about what this thing actually was.
Yep.
And so that was kind of a frustrating moment in that conference.
Agreed. And it has been a frustrating moment for weeks now. So
yeah.
We had something very not frustrating, which was the awesome adventures of Captain Spirit, the game for the Trace Universe you were just talking about.
Charmathon.
Can you explain what that is for people who didn't see it?
Yeah, for sure. So it's a Don't Nod game, and you know, the trailer shows like a young boy. It's like this very sort of twee you know, indie movie kind of vibe for sure.
I think you called it Wes Anderson, Austin.
Yeah,
we're looking at it.
I wasn't gonna call it until the very end. And the very end of it, it switched into the kind of like diorama aesthetic, and the other song came on. I was like, oh, okay. But what, do you have another director pinned on?
No, the vibe I got was actually Del Toro, like Pan's Labyrinth style, like sweet and not
too
like tainted by fascism.
Yeah,
but
you got to have the fascism.
Yeah, but there
Del Toro.
Was, yeah, but like
I get you.
At least there was a note in that that struck like. There's the kid is escaping from something.
There's a darkness.
There is a darkness.
The line of the
sort
of snarling
but the
about
music
like
didn't emphasize the darkness, and Del Toro would have.
Yeah, that's true. But nevertheless,
but also that like part of Life is Strange's aesthetic is like
poppy
music playing over like drama and death.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
That looks really cool. Little kid who I saw someone on Twitter describe it. I said Wes Anderson's Life is Strange 2. They said Wes Anderson's Calvin and Hobbes.
That's good.
It was Lena, I think.
The kid sounded okay, which is not an easy thing. Like a
sounded like a kid.
Yes, right. And not like grating. Like sometimes, like child voice acting can like it's easy to miss. Like it's tough to find someone who can do a convincing kid. Mm-hmm. It's also tough to find a kid who can act convincingly.
It's also
so whichever way they went, it seems to be working.
It's also interesting to see Don't Nod continuing to spread their wings. Vampire just came out.
They're having a year today.
And then what's the
Twin Mirror?
Twin Mirror, which I still haven't seen that trailer.
The trailer. I'll play it, but it was. I was not sold by the trailer.
It's like a sci-fi. What is it?
It's like this guy comes home to the town he grew up in, and he wakes up. And his shirt is all bloody, and then he has like weird mind dreams. Like it was not the trailer didn't super convey what was going on, but it also didn't like I don't know. It didn't sell me on it. Like I'm still curious about it because I trust Don't Nod at this point. Like even Vampire, which is like a flawed game, is like very ambitiously charming in a lot of ways. Like I really
want to play it.
I'm buying whatever they're selling.
Right.
Like whatever it is. Like I'm sort of in by default and. But I am more excited about like whatever they're up to with the new Life is Strange.
Also, Danielle, you and I need to hurry up and play that game because the other theme of today that I'm realizing is like after the C3, we got a little break and then we need to get ready for the fall, like
a long
release
fall.
Season. Like,
oh, boy.
Like,
we'll get there in a moment. We will get there in a moment. Oh, actually, the thing I thought was this fall is actually not. So, in fact, these next two games, neither of which are fall, both of which originally were, I think, fall. Terry Crews, Crackdown 3. He's back. What is that? What is this?
That did absolutely nothing for me at all. Like, I'm like, I like Terry Crews.
Like Terry Crews?
I'm predisposed to like that. I know the Crackdown
has. We were talking about Terry Crews in White Girls just yesterday.
We sure were. So, yes.
Why? So what is it that did nothing for it? Like, what was lacking? Where, identify the gap.
It reminds me of Agents of Mayhem.
Like, ooh, it does. Just, 100%. I thought that last year when I played both of them. Just, I was like, oh, actually, Agents of Mayhem feels a little bit better than Crackdown 3.
Yeah, I'm sweating.
Oh, in terms of movement. Sweating.
That's spicy for a second.
But what's that mean?
Like
blandness? Like,
just a bland, forced joviality about something that is utterly lacking in, like, actual inspiration or character for itself. Like, the entire, like, and I hope I'm wrong, but sure, everything they've shown to this point is, like, don't you just, like, it's trying to recapture what people loved a bit about, like, Saints Row the Third. Don't you just love, like,
or even Crackdown 1, yeah, right? Like, Crackdown 1 had a lot of, like, very authentic character, sure, that people, like, the voiceover guy was, like, a really charming way, right, to present
I
that
I will
game.
Never forget, I don't even remember the podcast I was listening to. They were talking about, it was like the One Up Yours era, but it was not One Up Yours, it was some other podcast. And just spent 10 minutes of people on that podcast just doing that voice. And it was just funny as shit. Just like, magnitude. And I was like, yeah, okay, hilarious. Here's what I think about that trailer. Two things I think about that trailer. One, if that trailer was the first time we'd seen Crackdown 3, we'd be like, yo, Crackdown 3, off February, right, sick, cool. But we saw this trailer last year, except Terry Crews was actually in it. They didn't just get him in
a video. This game was announced five years ago.
Right? And so here's the second thing. We've seen a version of this game, multiple times, and this version of the pitch didn't include any of the interesting elements from those other versions. Didn't include the buildings being the destroyable buildings that was promised forever ago in the initial pitch. It didn't include any of the stuff that I saw at the Microsoft booth last year, where they were talking about the systemic interaction between the different, like, crime groups that you were going after and how they, like, would react to the player hitting them by dropping in new stuff and, like, calling in extra, like, none of the system stuff at all is there. It's just goofy Terry Crews time. And, like, I'm good.
And that game's coming out theoretically in February.
February 22nd.
And it was not at, you know, maybe it'll be at their booth. I don't know. Or is it just
February?
No, their booth, I think their booth is just that theater. And, like, fans come to that, right? Because the at the actual E3 floor is just the mixer stuff. So Crackdown is just not here.
I thought I saw it on that floor. I really do. And then I really thought I saw it.
I don't think so.
And I forgot to go play it.
Oh,
I don't think I walked think around the whole area.
I thought it was all the way up in the back. If you're here and going to that as a fan, you'll have to let us know if it's there.
Because if it's not,
did you see a Crackdown today?
Because there has to be a gameplay demo of that thing that explains why that's interesting. Because that trailer didn't do it.
No.
A trailer that did look interesting, unless someone else has more Crackdown 3 thoughts. Metro Exodus looked nice. You're seeing that this week. I saw it at Judges Week. Can't talk about it yet. Can't talk about it until Tuesday.
Okay.
I'll save my thoughts until you get to play it.
Couple things that I really enjoyed. Yes. First, I just love the conceit of Polis, which is sort of the last, like, the beacon of human civilization within the metro system, has sent a train into the wilderness. I love this idea of, like, you are just on a great, like, train journey across the wasteland looking for signs of human life outside the metro.
And you find it. And that's the thing that I love about this trailer is it immediately reinforces something that was not in the announcement trailer last year, which is there are people out here and they have fucking...
And they hate you.
And they hate you because they're guys immediately, like... These unbelievers or whatever, well, right? Yeah. I don't want to get. I know.
And the implication
about that,
of that trailer, as I read it, is the narrator is not speaking for you and your crew journeying. Mm. It's someone encountering your people
from
coming
the
out of the metro.
Yes,
and this idea that, like, at some point, even I think the person, like, bites something out about, like, these infidels from Polis or something like that. And the end of the trailer, I think, is also that person basically just getting fucked up by our team, which is, like, yes, these people, like, don't like you and it's a hostile world, but also, is Polis going out and finding humans or is Polis going out and subjugating them?
Right. We'll see. We'll see in February also. When is that game out?
February 22nd.
That's the 22nd. So keep that count, date. Keeps going.
Anthem.
Yeah.
Yep.
Metro Exodus.
Mm-hmm. Crackdown is February.
February. There's a third February 22nd.
We'll get
game
there.
Now.
We'll get there.
Yeah, you know what it is?
No, do you remember? No, I don't remember.
It's on this list somewhere. I'm just hoping we'll get there.
I'm going to Google February 22nd.
I'm hoping we make it to February 22nd.
We'll find out.
Year.
There's a lot of games.
I'll be 35.
We'll talk more about Metro Exodus after you play it, and we can talk together about what our experiences have been. There's some other stuff in there that's like, can I reasonably say that I could have seen it in the trailer and gotten what it was? No. So we'll talk about it later this week.
Gone.
Does it sound like a...
What?
Day is gone.
Day's gone. We'll see that one
Dave's
tomorrow.
Gone. What
Dave's
happened to Dave?
Gone. Dave Lang's
Dave
gone.
Lang Memorial Theater.
Right. He has to be gone.
But did it at least sound like I might be on the right train track?
I mean, you're on the right. I
oh,
can't tell
boy.
You. Because I'm embargoed and I respect my relationship with Steph Tinsley. And all the PR agents in the world whose NDAs I sign. So
there you go.
I
just want to mention Massive Attack. Great song, Angel.
Good song.
Great use of a song
album.
In a trailer. I'm just gonna say,
agreed.
Great album.
Agreed. Kingdom Hearts 3, Frozen. Did it do anything?
Did that even qualify as a trailer?
You're too late.
That just seemed like a bunch of clips put together.
But also with the most disastrous audio mix.
Oh my god, there's no Foley.
It's unreal.
It's audio and music, and there was no Foley from people walking or attacking or doing anything in that whole portion where...
The whole MS conference, actually, the sound was a little...
Was it?
A large portion. And it was extra... I'm saying it was, like, on top of very poor mixing for this particular trailer. There was a lot going on for sound. Yeah.
It was like that Mummy trailer.
Yes. Oh my god.
Pan. That looked a lot like the version of Kingdom Hearts that I played at.
It looks a lot like Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
Like if you like Kingdom Hearts, it's more
and
Kingdom
Dark
Hearts.
Elsa.
If you don't like Kingdom Hearts, there's nothing about this that suggests this game's about to change it.
That feels a lot like a trailer for people who love that series already because it felt like there was the need to sneak in characters. You're like, oh shit, that's Terra, I think that's the name.
Hercules was in there.
Right, but I mean like the
character. Oh, sorry, the other characters.
Like
the Kingdom Hearts.
The non-Disney
stuff. The spiky hair characters.
The Heartless.
Right.
The Organization.
The Organization. That's
I played two of those games.
Did you?
Boy.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I shouldn't have.
So you know who Roxas is.
And I'm going to play the third one because I got to finish the fight.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
These games suck. But I played them both to like, maybe I'm missing. Because I love Disney. And so I thought like, and I like Square generally. And I like action RPGs. And I just, the story in those games.
That was an extremely.
Did you play the PSP one?
Fuck no.
I hear that's a good one. I hear it's
that
good.
22 and a third?
That might be right.
Days Gone By, Kingdom Hearts.
Days Gone, no, that's February 22nd. Days Gone, February 22nd and a half.
There's another
that's
one.
That's Kingdom Hearts, for sure.
Yeah.
It was an extremely Disney World-ass trailer in a lot of ways. I also just, it fucking kills me that, like, they're trying to have, like, deep character moments and, like, like personal drama and people at personal crossroads. And there's fucking Goofy with his utterly slack expression in the background.
Goofy is... Joel is making hand signals.
Just speak up.
Goofy died.
Okay, that's fine.
Listen, sometimes you got to tap because Goofy. Forza Horizon. You know what? Real quick, I'm so excited for people who I know who are excited.
I know
for
Kingdom Hearts means a lot to people.
What?
You're skipping stuff.
What do you mean I'm skipping stuff?
Kingdom
well, I have
Hearts.
A different.
We're still
list
talking about Kingdom Hearts. Yeah.
What's your list say?
No, well, I mean after Kingdom Hearts, we talked about Sea of Thieves.
Oh, that's we didn't because we left
we
the room.
This
we
part.
Were in,
oh,
and we
you
had to
left
go
the
to
room.
Play Sekiro. Or look at Sekiro.
Yeah, look at someone play Sekiro.
Look at someone play Sekiro. I touch it as a judge, but I don't get to talk about that. But
yeah.
So wait, tell what was the Sea of Thieves stuff?
Just like two new content expansions. Forgotten Shores, I think, which is like all lava and like
dangerous
boats
can't
hellish shit. Yeah,
boats can't go in lava.
Lava's
and
a many splendored thing.
Cursed Sails. So Forgotten Shores in July, and then Cursed Sails. I think in September, which is Cursed Sails is. Skeleton pirate ships.
Skeleton crews. Yeah.
Which is what we... Cause
we
now,
need that so bad.
Because that's why we're forced to prey on other players.
Right.
But now...
Let
if
me prey on skeletons.
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks... They're doing what they need to be doing, which is they've got a game that is like punching way above its weight, is charming as all get out, is gorgeous, and people, including me, really enjoy it in spite of an almost complete dearth of content.
Yeah.
And now they're putting content out there. So hurry up.
In July and September, that's like a really nice
pace.
Is that what it is, July and September?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's a good pace.
Because that's enough where like, oh, you know, you can dip back in for like 2 weeks. It's like, cool. Like I'll,
Any gap week where it's like, oh, you know what? There's nothing new out. There's nothing I'm really into right now. Let me slide back in.
How's Isaiah doing?
How are our friends?
How's your summer vacation? You know,
how's your dog?
Are you, what grade are you in next
Panther.
Year? You know,
his dog's name was Panther.
Oh, that's cute.
I remember these things. So we met friends with
CFPs. Yeah.
His name is Panther.
Oh, yeah. Cute.
Yeah. That's a good name.
His family raises pit bulls. They're sweet.
Yeah.
They're good dogs. They're not bad.
People
dogs.
Don't know. People should go watch our most recent Sea of Thieves stream. We made friends.
It was magical.
It was so good. Rob, so is the next thing on your list, Forza, or do you have something else in between?
A longer cut of the DICE Battlefield 5 Norway campaign.
With the lesbians.
I didn't see this at all.
So tell me about this.
So it looks like it's going to be set sort of in the looks like maybe the tail end of the conquest of Norway.
Okay.
Where like the British have maybe completely fled by now and the Nazis are starting to occupy it. And the extended version of this trailer sounds like sort of your, stereotypical, convivial Nazi officer with that, like, you know, trying to butter up the locals and connect to them.
The locals.
That's why, look, if you read Blitzed, uh-huh. which is the story yeah. of the Nazi regime's reliance on stimulants,
mm-hmm.
you'll realize that was a key component of the Blitzkrieg success.
Hmm.
And they went to Norway because that is, as we know and as the legend spoke of, the land of the Four Loko.
That's where Elsa is.
Four Loko. Oh, of course. That's where Elsa is. Frozen.
That's where Elsa is.
Did they show gameplay yet?
She shot.
Fuck no.
Elsa shot a thing with
like,
a magic.
Blap.
She killed something.
Yeah. And then Sora
Dark
is like,
Elsa.
I don't know my powers did that.
Yeah.
Because they don't. That's not canon.
You said that. You were like, that's not canon.
I watch a lot of Frozen.
So I, real quick, community member pointed out to me on Twitter, and this is very lovely, and I got permission to retweet it, that the specific language used between the two women was a connotation of romantic love.
Hell yeah.
Not just family love. So they weren't like, oh, I can say this 100%, but I can say normally the way this phrase is used
that's great.
Is to convey more of a like...
So that wasn't...
Yeah.
There was no more gay in the trailer?
That's what I'm saying, that like...
Oh, there was no,
no, but that was... We already knew that part, right? We saw
in
that
the
clip.
There's
no more gay.
I just wanted to relay that extra detail, the extra context
that is.
There.
Fantastic.
Yes.
But yeah, so it looks like a good like occupation story, like resistance in the early days of like you've just been taken over and the Nazis are trying to play nice, but like they're not. They're
Nazis
like,
aren't nice.
Every single thing they say has like a threat veiled in
did
it.
Did that
it
trailer go the way that we thought it was going to go with like the one character getting shot and the other one jumping off the...
Oh, it cuts off at the same point. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So we still like we still don't know like, you know,
is
what...
Is that playable this week?
I don't know.
What,
I think I'm seeing some stuff tomorrow.
Okay.
So I assume they've teased this so many times, I presume that tomorrow I'll get some answers.
You gotta hope at this point.
So these two into each other? What's up?
That's what I wanted to know.
Robin, any questions to developers? You know, what do you... Any questions
like,
about multiplayer?
I do.
So multiple people can fall in love with one another.
Right.
And then they smooch.
Do you have romanceable characters? We're asking many EA developers.
So Anthem doesn't have romance options.
Tell me why.
Have you added them to Battlefield 5?
I genuinely think that there is probably value in trying to get at the idea of like... Yes, we know that when you look at the entire bucket of people who fought in World War II, many of them were white dudes. But what we want to highlight are stories that have not been told. And that means telling the story of queer women is one of those things. Because yes, queer women also fought in World War II,
sure,
and they have not been featured in hundreds and hundreds of games, right? So I think that's probably, and I'm curious. I'm curious if that's like an active, I mean, they are making the game. They didn't just stumble into this. I'm curious what their thoughts are behind something like that.
Yeah.
Find out. Thank you. What else? What was next?
Forza Horizon.
What a pretty game.
60 frames per second.
Excuse me?
That's what he said. It runs at 60 frames per second.
Wait, did he
say
that
it like
part
that?
Either.
Yes, he did. He has a delightful Scottish accent.
Yell at me.
I'm sorry. I got very excited. It was a beautiful game set in Britain.
Yep.
He just said Britain, so I'm assuming it's like all kinds of British places.
No, that means something specific.
Doesn't England usually mean something specific, but Britain means
England
the word?
No. England is Southern Britain.
Yes.
Right.
Britain is England, Wales,
yeah.
and Scotland.
Yes.
We're getting some letters.
The United Kingdom, and the United Kingdom is those three.
Includes Northern Ireland.
And also Northern Ireland. Yes.
I'm not going to claim any of this, so no letters to me.
I think I'm right.
I don't know.
So that means no Northern Ireland in this game.
Right.
Because otherwise he would have said the United Kingdom.
Yes. You just said Britain.
Forza Horizon is like the arcade racing game from that team.
Oh, it was so beautiful.
It's
and this
so beautiful.
Amazing.
It's a different team.
Turn 10 makes the main series,
right. And then Horizon is from Playground Games,
which is one of the
acquired them. We'll talk about in a second. I played the demo for this at the event today. Those games demo so well, and this one was especially the case because it was like one of those 5-minute, 10-minute race demos where you jump from car to car, and in this case, you jump from season to season.
Oh, yeah.
So you start in summer. And it does the thing that, you know, the Forza Horizon pitch has always been like, it's the Horizon Festival. Like, it's a festival about cars and music and culture. And it's just like, it's a huge party. And so it's like, you know, good music is playing. You're driving fast down roads, you're in a fast car. And then you win the first race. You get to the end of that first race and it cuts into winter. And suddenly you're just like in an ice truck and like sliding all over the fucking road. You immediately feel how important the seasons are, which I guess that's one of the big pitches for this is like, it's just naturally turning over.
That was the thing that wasn't clear is like, is it going to be mid race? Is it like time passing naturally in the season or like, I don't know.
Right.
It's because the idea of it being so dynamic that like, oh shit, here comes winter. Like, it's preposterous from the idea of like we're simulating reality, but it's really cool from the like how that could immediately change
races.
Race. Like,
handling is so different in the snow. And then it went from snow, you know, you do the ice truck stuff that ends on literally a frozen lake where you can see the cracks. And it's one of the most beautiful games I've seen in motion in a long time. And then it goes into spring and it's like light rain showers in the sun, like sun showers, and you're going through the mud. And that was like a truck. I was in a truck racing five different bikes that had like Rage 2 style, like brightly colored smoke coming out of them and from the back. So it was just like almost like Mad Max Fury Road or something with the combination of like blue sky and bright color smoke. And then it goes back to summer for like the final stretch. And I was like, yeah, I'm here for it. Like, I'm totally here for it. I'm going to try to find time to play this one. I didn't play Forza Horizon 3 more than, like, 3 or 4 hours of it. But it especially felt like it contrasted so much for me with the Crew 2 demo I saw recently, which was so lifeless, had so little personality, had such a was going for the same thing in terms of, like, the
festival.
Crew, right,
yeah,
festival vibes. I mean, you've seen some of this footage, right?
Yeah.
Festival vibes. You're an influencer in the Crew 2. That's the story. Is like you're just trying to become an influencer X Games.
The crew knew was about getting vengeance for your brother
against
your mortal enemy, Shiv, who was taking over the
V8s, V12.
No, it was the area code.
It was like the 509s or whatever.
Yeah, but what's the Detroit area code? Shit.
8th Mile.
Okay, well, anyway.
313.
313.
Yeah, it was. Thank you, Joel.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joel.
Why do you just have a picture of yourself on your phone? I looked down at Joel, and it was just Joel having taken a photo of himself looking down.
I'm sending it to Danica.
Good.
Danica needed it.
Speaking of Danica, there was a she was doing some outreach to the racing game community.
Thanks.
Today.
Good.
If there's one thing Forza has always needed, it's the ability to make like-minded friends via in-game 10-character messages sent using your Xbox controller.
Is that a thing they highlighted?
Yes.
It is indeed. That you could you'd be driving around and you'd run into people and you could have convincing lifelike exchanges like, hey, do you want to go hooning?
Excuse me?
Convoy? Oh, sorry. Drifting.
What adults do is up to them.
Yeah.
As long as everyone's consenting.
Adults. And this is the part that I did find.
Where do
bit,
babies
like,
come from? Hooning. I'll tell my daughter.
Hooning.
Hooning and convoys.
But that was like, this was the other thing they were pitching is like, now you can like convoy up with your friends. And like, they were showing like multiple cars, like sort of drifting around corners. And I'm like,
right. The drifting feels good.
Is that fun, though? Like, the drifting, yeah,
drifting
sure.
feels good.
But, like, is it more fun with, like, doing
with
that alongside
friends.
All my Xbox friends?
Maybe. We should try it.
I mean, yeah.
We'll try it. We'll
sure.
See. We'll try it. Listen, I'd love to hoon with you one day.
Yeah.
I've always known this.
Find me on
thing.
Xbox XX Convoy
known.
Hooner XX.
I've known about this. Oh, wait, the whole time we've worked here.
We're Drift Combat.
I've known.
Microsoft
bought some studios.
They four.
Bought four studios and formed a new one.
Some of them you might have thought they already owned.
Oh, I think that's
like,
fair.
Like Playground Games.
Who makes Forza Horizon. Undead Labs. So one Playground Games who makes Forza Horizon. Undead Labs who makes
State
of Decay.
Rumored to be making a new Fable game.
Right. That's, yeah.
Which is probably why they bought them.
Yep. State of Decay devs, Undead Labs, who are supposed to be supporting that game with a lot of DLC and have always dreamt of making a kind of bigger multiplayer version of that game.
And if you're going to make that, get bought.
Compulsion Games, who we know as the developers of We Happy Few.
Mm. Yeah, that was the biggest sort of question mark.
But that's a Gearbox published game.
Right, but Compulsion.
And so what are they working on is my
right,
question.
Right.
What's the project that they showed Microsoft? And Microsoft was like, yeah, you're ours. We're going to buy you. Here's some money.
I mean, the continued sort of association that Microsoft has taken to We Happy Few, I've never quite understood from the beginning. It made sense that when they were doing the early access equivalent, and it's like We Happy Few made sense as a game to bring in because it was like relatively far along, so it was like kind of polished. It wasn't going to scare people off by playing a game early. But their fascination with that game has just I've just never quite got it.
Right.
They just clearly see something in that game or team or the things they want to work on, and so I'm not against the acquisition. I just didn't.
Maybe Phil Spencer just really likes that.
Maybe.
Aesthetic.
And
that's totally possible.
And that's
He's
fine.
Into mod,
totally.
You know? Like
totally. Ninja Theory is the last one. And I just thought through
that's
something.
Really exciting.
It's a great one. I also just thought through, and this is just for the people in this room, how you could get from knowing that to some of the rumors we heard.
Yeah.
There is a line in which
there are.
A game of telephone and when some other shit gets confused.
Yes.
Yes.
That's interesting. We talk about that sometime in the future.
Yes.
I think that's a great acquisition. I think that's a really smart...
Two different types of games they could potentially get out of them if Ninja Theory continues to make the stuff they made in the past. It's like they're really good at character action.
Yep.
And like with Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, like they're also like really experimental, doing the kind of like weird, strange, emotional, thoughtful game. Like, you know, I know some people have some problems with Hellblade, but like it was clearly a very thoughtful game. Like whatever it got wrong, like they set out to make something about a serious subject in a way that, like, most developers wouldn't have tried to find a way to convey that.
Right.
And I'd love to see them, like, have another go at it. So, like, going forward, you're going to see those, you know, can I get a new DMC through Microsoft if I'm not going to get that through Capcom? Then, like, hell yeah. Like, sign me up. Ninja Theory also made Enslaved, right?
Yep.
Which is
Turn
a
to the West.
Fucking great game. Like, I really
it's
like
it. It's all right.
It's a fucking great game.
Journey to the West. They also formed The Initiative.
Written by Alex Garland.
Okay, cool. The Initiative, which is a new studio that is, the head of it is someone who used to be at Crystal Dynamics.
Daryl Gallagher,
who helped reboot Tomb Raider at Crystal Dynamics. Here's a small...
Boy, Tomb Raider's going places. Anyway.
We'll talk about
it
shortly.
Because
that was hands-on at this event, and we can talk about that. I played that at Judges Week, and there's a lot to talk about.
I played that demo, too.
Right. Yeah. So, the thing about The Initiative that's interesting to me is, given Tomb Raider and the way it tells stories and the type of game that is, that's a AAA, big budget, that's the sort
video
of game...
Video game.
That game it's also comes closer out. To the stuff that Sony does.
So that game
it's
comes
like,
out.
Are they building a studio that's going to start making those kinds of experiences?
Where is that studio at? Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, like... on first blush, that sounds like some conspiracy-ass shit where it's like, oh, yeah, Santa Monica, just like Sony Santa Monica, just like Naughty Dog, blah, blah, blah. It means something real to put a studio in a place where there are other studios. The reason that Montreal has become an epicenter of game development in North America is because you can go work for Ubisoft and then stop working at Ubisoft and become an indie dev and find support through local community stuff, through other indie devs. You can go work at other Montreal-based studios. You can conceive of putting a studio in Santa Monica as a way to start to slowly peel off some of the talent from the other studios.
It's also a specific type of talent, right?
Yes.
So it's like if the studio is going to make sort of like some of the Sony DNA, yes. Like you're going to make like a big AAA single player story driven experience.
The solution I don't love that much, but yeah. Which Microsoft desperately needs in their portfolio.
They need it. I like that stuff a lot.
Plenty of people do. I'm not and saying don't make it. No, yeah, if you're Microsoft, yeah. You better fucking make
it. But
those
if you
games.
Put it out, if you put it out in Santa Monica and like, hey, like Microsoft is giving us unlimited budget to make a brand new
to
whatever.
Build an engine, and you're an engine person, and you build cool
and you're going
shit.
To be. Like, given that Microsoft doesn't have something like this in their portfolio, it is going to be like a crown jewel going right. forward. Like, that's a really appealing offer. And you have like a whole city that is full of folks that have built shit like that for a decade
yep.
now.
Yep, exactly. Next thing on my list is The Division 2 in Washington, D.C. That trailer, here's what I liked about that trailer. That trailer showed level 30 combat. It opens in this kind of like jungle environment that's revealed to be like an overgrown.
That confused garden. The shit out of me.
Totally. Which was like intentional, but they didn't like yeah. play it well enough.
I thought it was just, a Lost Planet.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, you know, I don't know the Potomac region that well. I mean, maybe.
The jungle like, is here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the bayous of the Potomac. Right? That, sure.
I mean, that's in Fallout 3 totally does just a kid somehow become the bayou at some point. So, you know,
yeah. I've radioactive shit, you right. know, all
right. Right, so this yeah. is also post-apocalyptic like that. Yeah. Here's what I liked about that trailer was seeing high-level combat. One of my favorite things about The Division, a game that I have major issues with, a game in which you absolutely kill a black inmate, a woman, who is leading other inmates as she's shouting Black Lives Matter, you shoot her to death. Two or three blocks from where I used to work in Manhattan, by the way, which is very strange. My thing I liked about that game was the endgame combat, which becomes very tactical. It's the closest a third-person shooter has ever felt to XCOM, modern XCOM, to me. In both a combination of use of abilities, but also flanking, really feeling like there was this sort of slow-paced but high cost exchanges.
What was that that mode they added where you were going into like the
snow stuff or
yeah no it was like
the survival stuff.
The survival stuff. What
yeah,
was
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
yeah. Like
I mean, so it's that's like a snowstorm. I forget if that's called blackout or like snowstorm or like
yeah. Blizzard. It was a really interesting.
We streamed it. Me and yeah. Jack DeKeat streamed it for Waypoint once. We should go watch that stream. It's fantastic. That mode is great and it has that feeling all the way through it because everything's so high level and so stressful. That combat that they showed was a lot of that. And we'll talk more about that because you played that. I played that today. That embargo was in a day or two. So we'll also come back around and talk about that. But DC, okay. You know, there's nothing story-wise there to get me excited. It's just I like how that combat felt in that first game. So.
They had good VO? Good, you know?
What was the
talking you know, amongst like the, each other. You
hey,
know?
Matt, go look over there.
Matt sucked a little bit, it seems.
No, wait, did Matt he suck? Was the POV character. That was the best part. Yeah. Is Matt fucking.
Matt
like,
wasn't great.
Oh my God. It was like, Matt, they're over there. Matt, I need. Could you res. Matt, can you help me out? Just right behind you, Matt.
Like, everybody else was good and competent, but Matt.
Matt's new. Matt had to.
Look, everyone has a player
Matt
like that.
Matt was on
that
his phone
group.
Playing that well, Bethesda Blades. And they were playing
Blades.
Doing.
Yeah,
there was
right.
another thing in that where, like, when they were sort of grouping up, they brought someone in yes. and they're like, oh, we're going to have to level you up a little bit, aren't we? And she's like, yeah, sorry, I've been busy. Yeah. Like, which is, like, fun. Like,
which
fun.
Is
like,
real.
They always have the best canned, like, it's, playthroughs.
It's both very good and very bad. It finds the perfect middle ground. I love it.
But I did love the entire, like, look, we see all you folks who, like, wanted to play a little more of The Division, but, like, we all got lives.
Yeah. They didn't say, like, am I bringing my character in or not, right? Are we rolling a new character from the jump?
In that video,
they were level 30, but, like...
They weren't.
They're fighting level 30 enemies.
She hit 30 at the end of the video.
Oh.
Right? That's how I read it. It was like, oh, shit, you're level 30, and...
Okay.
Let's save the world. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, and they're like, let's charge the capital.
Right. My question is that the end of the game or is it the beginning of the game? Are we taking level 30 characters to level 60, or are we taking new level 1 characters to level 30 again?
Yeah.
We'll find out. I don't know. We'll talk about our experiences. Next up for me, Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Unless there's something else small in between that didn't make this Kotaku breakdown that I'm just reading.
What?
Who could have?
Yeah, I mean, well, they did show a lot. Like, have they shown that Compulsion, that We Happy Few trailer before?
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
What was the trailer?
It was much more of an articulating the various sides behind what's happening in We Happy Few, which is very much like... somebody is trying to convince the what sounds like sort of like the Scottish Morpheus of this world to basically like Ollie. Stop mutinying against the Joy. And he's basically saying like everyone is dying in the streets. Like people are starving and they're painting fucking rainbows,
right?
You know, in the crosswalks. And it was kind of nifty because like it does sort of set up this idea of like, okay, this guy is definitely like the one, you know, lucid person in a world that's, you know, lost its reason.
Right.
But at the same time, that guy might also be a bit of a monster too. Like he's definitely going no holds barred into this. It looked cool. Like I'm into playing that game. I'm into the playing that story. Yes. I'm not sure that is the game that Compulsion Games are making.
Yeah. Right. Right.
We talked a little bit about the We Happy Few stuff a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. But there is some story stuff there that is fascinating that we did not talk about in explicit detail. Not because it was embargoed, because I didn't think about it until just now. That has to do with like, that's a post-World War II game, right? That's a game that's about Britain making making some sort of terrible deal with the devil. That's like, all right, the Germans are going to leave us alone if we give them this thing. And that thing is terrible. Is terrible. And then they can't live with themselves. Like, that is the pitch of that game from the demo that I got.
Hmm.
Where they're like,
that's interesting.
We are cutting off an arm to live through this. But, like, what if you loved your arm a lot more? And, like, that is why the Joy. That is why the... And so it is very much like a very post-trauma, post-war game that stuff interested me. I don't know that it was always told particularly well. There's some flashbacks that didn't land for me. But thinking about that now and thinking about the kind of ideas there does make Compulsion, again, a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thinking about acquisition.
Well, yeah, like think about the way we were framing our reaction to We Happy Few was more like it seems like they were working backwards, building the game that we were interested in after starting with a framework that doesn't necessarily support that type of game. So what if you reversed it and would have, it sounds like 2K is making a BioShock, but like, what if like Microsoft could take a team that is interested in those type of games and like, hey, go wild, like actually go make one of those games.
Totally.
That's exciting.
Totally.
Yeah.
Shadow of the Tomb Raider is up next for me. Can someone else talk about this? Because it's been a little while since I played that demo and saw... I'm curious how they pitched that to the Microsoft, because I was still in that event at the time, so I didn't see it.
Rob, do you want to do this one? I feel like you should do this one. You had feelings. I saw those feelings happen
for
you. No,
I mean, like, look, maybe there's a perfectly good explanation for what looked like a brief poster shot or promo shot of, like, Lara's face divided in two. One is Lara Croft, and the other half of her face is Lara Croft in Dia de los Muertos face paint. And
there is such an irony there based on some of the... like. There is a reason for that. It's just not the reason they're actually selling it on. Which is... And Patrick, you just played this demo, so I really would love to hear you explain the demo that you just played, which I just double-checked and is out of embargo, so I can talk about it too, thankfully. We hit a weird situation where
I wasn't allowed to... I wasn't supposed to take photos of the screen, but I took a photo of the screen.
Nice.
Because the demo opens with this statement from the team that says, Shadow of the Tomb Raider was created by a diverse and talented team comprised of multiple genders, backgrounds, ethnicities, religious beliefs, and personalities. Although the game is not based on real-life events... represents a work of fiction. It was developed in conjunction with a historian and cultural consultants. The variety and partnership were both instrumental in crafting the world you're about to experience, no matter where you come from or who you are. Allow us to be the first to say, welcome to Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Which that was like a really cool way to open that game. The demo skips over like your time in this like Mexican town.
So it doesn't pick up while you're still there?
It opens where they're like, hey, we're chasing after this guy.
Okay, so you
go, and then they put on the mask,
right.
And then you go into the crowd, and it seems like that would be a point in the game where like you're going to be able to explore this area a little bit. You're
going to talk to some characters there a little bit.
None of that happens in this demo. It literally goes to like a hand-holded cutscene where like she's jumping over cliffs, she goes to the town, and like then it picks up. Like,
you're like walking through the town, overhearing people. You're basically there to pursue this guy who's part of a big company, who's like an archaeological dig, who's digging into these ancient ruins that are just outside of this Mexican city. Is that all in this trailer?
No.
Okay. So that's the way this demo goes. Do you want to keep explaining the demo?
Yeah, and so it picks up, you know, you're going after this guy, Trinity, which is like this, you know, conspiracy, like, company that is Laura's father was going after in the beginning, in the first two games. And I really liked those first two games. I really, really liked those games a lot. I think the story leaves something to be desired, yeah. but right. I think, you know, her as a character, like, I think is, like, really well acted. Like, I think she comes across very well.
Animation is amazing.
Yeah, and I really liked the gameplay in those games. Like, it's these, like, there's crafting and some survival stuff, but it's like, I don't know. Like, the way they balance everything, like, I just really, really like those first two games. And this one is made not by Crystal Dynamics. You know, it's made by WB Montreal.
Mm-hmm. Again.
Crystal Montreal. Dynamics is making the Avengers game. Right. This seems to be a little ways off. And yeah, so, like, the first demo's not particularly good, I thought. Like,
you go into a tomb.
Yeah, like it's a tomb, there's some puzzles.
There's combat. Did you do all the combat stuff?
I did the combat, which is...
And then the water?
The water combat?
No, just the water. You did the water bit.
Yeah, underneath the... Yeah, I swam in the water.
No, like the flood.
Oh, yeah, but that's at the end of the demo. Okay. So, okay. So, like, but the majority of the demo is, like, solving some puzzles, shooting some guys. Mm-hmm. It's... Because I've played both those games before, and none of this demo was like, here's what's new in this game. Mm-hmm. It's more just like... It was more for, like, if you haven't played, you know, before, here's what these games are about, which is fine, but I already knew that. And, yeah, then the end is, so she picks up some relic.
It's, like, very much like, oh, there's an ancient prophecy that, you know, the end of days could come if this relic falls into the wrong hands, is what she says.
And unlike the, like, the modern Tomb Raider games, or, you know, in the timeline... you know, not like this is set before like Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3, like the original games, right? This is like how she becomes that. Those games, I don't think, had as many like supernatural elements in this.
They do. By two, at the end of one, and then from 2-4.
So I only played one. Okay.
There's the dinosaur and shit like that.
I don't consider that.
No. There's like magic. There's like a demon in that series, 100%.
Oh, okay. All right. So then there is, that's precedent. So, it's, you know, this series has a supernatural bent to it. And like that was very much played up in the first. Especially the first Rise of the Tomb Raider. Was the first one?
No.
It was just Tomb Raider, and then it was Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Rise of the Tomb Raider sounds like it should be
Lara
first,
Croft finally is going to become the Tomb Raider she's destined to be in this new release. Finish which game? Any of them. That's how they pitch all these fucking games.
Yep.
I think in this case, it's because they don't know how to pitch it, what it really is, which you're about to get to.
So she pulls this relic out, and then she meets up with, you know...
It's like a knife. It's like there's a knife and there's a box, but she only has the knife.
Yeah, and then you hand it over to the guy, and he says, like, you fucked this up. And
she's like, so good, because he actually goes, like, all right, so where's the box? And she's like, what? He's like, you took the knife without taking the box? She's like, I didn't see a box.
Fucked
up. Like, oh, okay. Like, I can't believe you thought you were qualified to deal with any of this.
Takes it, walks away, says, I guess I'll go save us.
Yeah, and the flood starts.
And she turns around, and yeah, like, this, essentially, almost like a, you know, a tsunami is, like, coming through. And
just devastates,
levels this town. And like the thing that the demo conveyed, I thought, like, pretty well. And you don't get a chance to, like, walk through all the sections. Like, it's doing again the jump along thing. I don't know how much you got to see, but like for the one that I played, you know, you're watching, you know, her do all these actions. Like, you don't actually get to do these, but you are watching a town be devastated. You're watching, like, hundreds of civilians, like, lose their lives.
It's a quick sequence, but it is bad.
There's a specific sequence where she is, like, shimmying across a building. There is a child hanging on, and, like, you just watch the child fall
into
and, like,
water.
Just die. And then, yeah, like, the sequence ends with, I can't remember the character's name, her, like, friend.
Her partner. Like, one of her, like... Dungeoneering partners.
Bro. Yeah.
The Brogan.
And
he's like, so he's a person of color. Also, the dude from Trinity is a person of color. So it's like two dudes of color being like, yo. And so he says...
Yeah, he's like, you know, she's like, I messed up. Like, I caused the apocalypse. And like his response is like not everything's about you.
Right. What, he specifically is like, we got to go help these people. And she's like, no, I have to go stop him. And he's like... Your fucking conspiracy weird bullshit can hold on for a second.
Like, these people are dying.
Drowning. We are on top of a building. We can help some of them.
And you can hear, like, crying in the background. Right. Like, you can hear moan. Like, you can hear the water. Like, you can hear this abject...
So this is a game about white guilt. And white
100%.
Kind of fucking up. And they don't know how to...
White guilt, through the lens of, like...
Privilege rather than just...
Well, I just mean, like, a specific archetype, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Indiana Jones, like, which is, like...
It belongs in the museum. So, let me talk about... Because there's more to this demo. There's more to this experience of how they pitch this game that fell on, like, that was so We go into this theater, Square Enix Theater. This is at Judges Week a few weeks ago. And we sit down, and they begin explaining. First of all, they say they're going to put the tomb back in Tomb Raider. And they're going to express them in new terrifying ways. And I was like, all right, like, here we go.
But so, we're still going to raid them, right?
Still going to raid them, right? And so that's where I was like, okay, like, we're going to get this. Like, I have always had some issues with the sort of tomb raiding Indiana Jones stuff. Because it's like, yo, these people, like, this is their cultural history. What are you doing? Like, you don't, it doesn't belong in a museum unless they own the museum. This isn't just a fun thing for you to have and put in your museum to show the expanse of your fucking empire. But they immediately pivot on this pitch and spend 20 minutes walking through this city called Paititi. So this is a hub. It's a hub city. It's a city. It's like an undiscovered by white folks city in the jungles of Central America, where a bunch of ancient civilizations have kind of come across time and left their mark. So you have Mayan influence, you have Aztec. It's like, it is very much like a grab bag of South and Central American indigenous cultures, which they had their people, you know, talk to consultants about. They said, like, well, we knew that there was influence that went from north to south, so we also imagine a world in which there could be influence from south to north, in which there was exchange that way. And then they started using language that I just didn't expect them to use, right? Which is, they said, like, we really wanted to show meaningful engagement with you interacting in a respectful way with a living culture. I'm like, okay, that's one way of, okay. They say, the people of Paititi help Lara way more than she could ever help hope to help them. They say, there's a specific phrase, I have to find it, because it's just like, oh, this is not, God, where did I, okay, here we go. Someone, the one of the writers in the project was saying, like, we know that there are real cultures that live in the jungle that are indigenous cultures that we could have made this game about, but we didn't want to focus on real cultures. It was important that we didn't, because we don't want to draw attention to contact-resistant cultures. They didn't know what a contact resistance culture was. They talked to somebody about that, because this game is about that. They went on to talk about how when you recover things from... So the city is the city that has been, that Trinity's become involved with, and also another, I believe if I'm getting this right, another external cult has recently moved in from another one of these cultures, or has grown from this space, and there was an internal resistance against those things, against these external forces. And so it's like, when you recover artifacts, you return them to this internal resistance group. They like made a point of saying that you're not taking anything from this valley. Everything stays in this valley.
The collectibles are not going to the Croft Museum.
But there's a tension here, because also you find like upgradable, your stuff gets upgraded by being crafted by people here. And like, you know, someone said, it's like you're wearing an artifact. And it's like, oh, there's something there's a tension here between their best like intentions and the fundamental structure of a game in which the numbers go up, and they go up by taking cool shit from tombs. But also this game would 100% by the end of that, the demo that they showed us, which also included this whole thing of like Lara as like, what if Batman was willing to kill people like in the jungle, using the jungle the way Batman uses like the city as like, it's her vehicle for hurting people and like descending into a willingness to be a bad person and becoming obsessed with this hunt for
at least that would be an acknowledgement stuff. Of like what the first two games did not wrestle with,
no,
which is that you have this vulnerable like the whole pitch was, yeah, like this is how she learns to become, you know, the woman she's going to become, she's going to be in these other games, and yet like within 5 minutes she's sneaking up behind someone, taking constantly. A knife and slitting this dude's throat in a cool badass animation, and it was such like, I understand, you know, the dilemma of like having to take out these enemies to have conflict and tension, but like the way they actually animated that stuff was such in conflict with the character,
so brutal.
So to actually, so like whatever the ultimate failures of Shadow of the Tomb Raider might end up being in by virtue of starting with a flawed structure in which like maybe you can't actually resolve these in the way that you want to, in the way that you're talking about. It's like, but like here's like. In the same way, in like I'll draw a similar parallel to like Halo Infinite. At least they're trying to ask the question in a different way, right? So this isn't a fundamental changing of the structure.
I'd rather have this game than the third one of these, in which it doesn't even try to ask these questions.
Right.
I have no idea. Like, I left feeling like, hey, can anyone pull this off? How do you stick the landing on Tomb Raider once you're aware of the flaws of it, and like, it's clear they're not pitching it this way. They're not pitching this as the white guilt game. They're not pitching this as, you know, there was a bit in this demo where they're showing us PyTT and saying like, here are the people who are like devoted to this religious cult. But then also, hey, remember, not everybody in the city is religious. Like, there's people who have religion's important part in many people's lives, but other people devote their times to crafts or to soccer or like whatever, to sport, to fishing, to, you meet a kid who has like, his dice have gone missing and you have to help him find, there's like lots of side quests in this game, which is a new thing, right? Like interacting with people. Lara talks to people in this game constantly. And so I left it feeling like they were setting off to make a game about white guilt, about the actual history of shitty Tomb Raiders and, you know, the history of Empire sending academics and explorers and looters to cultures to take stuff from them. And also left feeling like, even if they try, this thing feels tainted. It still feels marked. It still feels like there is a weight to it that is making it consumable, that's making it a filter for the guilt of loving this thing. And they certainly don't know how to sell it, because those ads and those trailers are about Lara becoming the Tomb Raider we know she is again for the third time. And they're not about, hey, how does someone recognize their own flaws and still be, and also see that their talents put them into a space where they're going to hurt people and do bad things. That's not how it's being pitched. And like, I don't know. We'll see. I'm so curious.
I wonder if, you know, from their perspective, it's like, hey, we want to make this, edgier is the wrong word, but like riskier play, yes, from storytelling. But we can also just like pitch it as like, yo, we're making another Tomb Raider, and yeah, like people will check
people
it out.
Buy it.
And then like, what if we can, you know, try to have our cake and eat it too? It's like, because that's a harder sell.
100%.
Maybe that alienates some people in the process, but like, they might just buy it anyway, because like, it's because a lot of those, it's just another Tomb Raider game stuff is there, right? Right? Like, you're probably going to be able to, you could compartmentalize some of this stuff and just play another Tomb Raider game, yeah, whether you choose to engage with the other pieces or not.
No, I was thinking, like, I like the idea that people who are just in it for the Tomb Raider ride are going to play a game, and it's basically going to raise questions about the contradictions of this character and the morality of this like hero,
right,
and what makes her heroic. I like the idea that like there is a way in which this is sort of backdooring some important context into a franchise that's been pretty skunked by its historical contexts and its franchise history. But my concern watching this trailer is the best version of this we get, Lara goes full The Last Samurai or something like that.
God,
like, the best version of that is like,
right,
where she's like, I get it now. I totally understand. I am throwing away my cloak of colonial oppressor.
And I'm putting
and
on
I'm
this cloak
of
plus
allyship.
Three. Or just like literally.
I'm one of you now.
This plus three cloak of your ancient god, because I'm taking it and turning it into my invisibility cloak.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's scary.
I know
to
you're
think
struggle.
About. Right.
But there's also a version of this, though, that I think, I hope this is a game that has the courage to not make you feel that good about Lara at the end of it. Like,
right.
I
don't
want
the wraparound.
The ending I'm thinking of is, like, a cool thing that Seven Samurai and The Magnificent Seven both have is the end, when you've saved the village, when you've helped the townsfolk, they would like you to leave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
It's you're like, not from here. You're still a samurai.
Right. And
you're
the things you represent.
Carries a gun around. Are you kidding me?
Right. Like, yes, you have helped us, but people like you are also the reason we were in the shit to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Please go.
That'd be great. We'll see. We'll see. February 20th. No, when does that game out? September 14th.
So soon.
That's real soon.
Very soon.
And that was when I realized
that comes out
like,
the same day as something else too.
I know,
we are
yeah.
fucked.
What
we're,
is
we're done for?
Quick, a couple things we overlooked.
Yes, please.
There was a cool PUBG trailer with some tight editing.
Very good editing.
I missed this.
I was
yeah, what
very
was this?
Pleased.
I only gave him the highlights. It was like, yo, there's a winter map yeah. coming.
The winter map.
Yeah, it was more of a tone thing. It just did a really good job with obviously knowing what that game looks like
right.
and how it plays out.
Somebody messaged me and said Wes Anderson's PUBG.
There you go. Wes Anderson's PUBG. It was just
oh,
very, very
shit,
nicely
it was.
Put together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Winter
that,
map.
That profile shot of the car clean. Rolling down the road was very Wes Anderson. Tales of Vesperia, that do anything for anybody?
Yeah, like,
it's
not for me.
Anime
I'm not going to play that game, but people have wanted Tales of Vesperia.
Yeah, go look up my boy
so
Buffon on Twitter. He wanted that game, and now he's finally getting that game.
And Bandai Namco on Twitter was like, never.
Yeah, like literally added him and said, we will never do this game in English.
And doing it.
They're doing this game in English. He's the same guy we profiled for the guy who played hundreds of hours of Baten Kaitos from last year.
Another thing they sort of brought out is they did this sort of nod to other Microsoft divisions. But they were talking about, in addition to the ways they're improving Xbox Game Pass, they're like, remember Ready Start? Fuck Ready Start.
What's Ready Start? Now we're going.
That's sort of the quick launch function of the Xbox One. Like your state is saved. You just go right back into it, which is cool. Not really, but it's being augmented by some games will support this. Fast Start. That's the new shit. It uses machine learning to launch your game faster.
This was also the only woman who presented on stage.
She was good.
She was great. And it was somebody from the engineering team as well, which was cool.
Yeah.
But it was very much like I was lost after 4 seconds.
Is it on the blockchain or nah? Not on the blockchain.
It's not on the blockchain. But
next year.
But the use of machine learning, all that, like I was sort of thinking about.
What does
about
that even
this.
Mean?
I'm not a fucking engineer.
I know, but I'm saying if you're gonna use that, I'm not saying you. I mean, like the Microsoft.
What does it mean for this specific functionality?
I understand the general concept of machine learning, but like, what does that mean for like I play this game and then it
I stop playing
boots faster?
I'm a machine learning algorithm, I've seen Patrick. You always stop playing when you get to a hard puzzle. So because you're not smart. That's I'm a machine.
You're dragging me because of my anxiety over.
No.
And so I'm just going to load the save from, like, I guess, in front of a hard puzzle.
That's adaptive difficulty.
You're right. Sorry.
So that's what you're describing. My suspicion is basically it's going to be looking at, like, is doing something to lower the footprint of what has to be stored memory to save a game state, and it'll basically be using machine learning to pare that down as much as possible.
That actually makes sense to me, because then what that means is what they're providing is something that developers have previously been able to use in development, where it's like, okay, you're at this part of the game, that means you don't have to load in these assets, you don't have to blah, 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 blah. This would mean that like that could be a system-wide functionality that developers could then just hook into to let Microsoft do the heavy lifting on knowing what assets don't need to be stored inside of the whatever that save is when you power down the system.
You know, a game could really benefit from that.
I mean,
saving.
What's that?
State of Decay 2, which is the only game I've played on my Xbox that has to reload itself fucking time I play. Yeah,
okay. I play on PC, so I just close it anyway.
Mm.
Oh,
it works.
Oh, all right.
What's next? Sessions.
Skate 4.
Is it Skate 4?
It's a skating game.
Joel looks very
sick. It looks like a skate game, though, right?
Talk to me
about
this.
It does look like a skate game.
Here, wait one second. I'm going to move the mic.
We saw a truck. That's the bottom of a skateboard.
Mm-hmm.
We got real excited. And it wasn't Skate 4.
Thank you, Joel. But
who's making that game?
Yeah, who's making it?
Oh, God. I had notes for this.
No one knows.
I thought we had notes.
I thought we had notes.
I you had said very there, good notes.
There may have been an Ollie.
It's an independent studio called Creature.
Creature.
Yeah, and it's like CREA, and there's like a asterisk or something, and then TURE.
Gotcha.
There might be tricks.
If there's not tricks, then that's
they fucked up. It's a skateboard. They do
Rob,
the tricks.
I didn't know you reveal new things every day.
Depth, man.
So much.
Devil May Cry 5.
With Scalebound guy.
He does kind of look like Scalebound. That guy's name was Drew. I remember the character from Scalebound's name was Drew. Because Drew Scanlon. I remember like, haha, Drew, it's you. You're in the game. You put on your earbuds and fight dragons or whatever.
It looks like Riverdale Devil May Cry.
Devil May Cry.
Riverdale.
I don't know that I saw it, but now I want to, and I badly want to see it.
No one in Riverdale so far, from what I've seen in the first three
you
or four
episodes.
You
haven't seen shit, Austin.
Yeah,
No one has one that terrible accent that the character in this, that
Nero. Nero?
No, not Nero. The woman with Nero.
Mm.
Who had, wow, they're bad accents coming?
I mean,
hell
that.
Yeah.
Miss Grundy. Yep.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Miss Grundy has bad accents. Anyway, this accent was bad.
Miss Grundy was in the game, basically.
Oh, yeah,
she sort of was.
Okay. That game,
the trailer didn't do anything for me. It looked like a Devil May Cry game, but it, like, for a game that, like, we've been hearing about for a couple of years now, like, we're making a Devil May Cry. It's gonna, you know, it. I don't know. It just looked like another Devil May Cry, which I guess maybe that's enough for most people.
Have they always hung out in a van like the Scooby Gang and gone?
No, okay, well, no, there was a little more humor in this one. That was actually a little bit closer to the Ninja Theory one.
DMC 3 opens with Dante like throwing a pizza in the air and like kicking a knife into somebody. You know what I mean? Like catching the pizza and taking a bite. There's always been a sort of like, almost like Joss Whedon taken to 11 and then in Japan moved into Japanese kind of anime influenced, you know.
There's the Bill O'Reilly boss, right?
No, that's
That's the Ninja Theory one.
Oh, right. I see.
That's a different.
Capital D, lower M, capital C.
Gotcha. Right.
This is all Dimka. Caps, DMs.
This is Dimka. Dimka.
Dimka. Wait.
Dimka?
Dimka. DMC versus Dimsy.
DMC.
Dimsy.
What?
People like this, not like it. What's the,
you know,
no, but I mean, what's the vibe in the air where people are like, yes, finally.
I loaded one message board thread that said, I hate the art. And that was like, that was all I saw. Like, that's consensus is that one page of a thread said the art was bad. I don't know. Where was Resident Evil 2? Come on. It's been 3
good
years.
Good fucking question. Yeah. Cuphead expansion coming.
Yeah.
Starring Ms. Chalice.
Ms. Chalice. Thank you. Right.
Yeah.
So I saw it written as a Ms. We don't know what the status of her relationships are.
I just hope it's not like an abbreviation for anything, but Massive Chalice.
Yeah.
Massive Chalice coming back finally.
Chalice.
We should play Massive Chalice. We don't have time.
I mean, it's all right.
It's all right, but it's cool. It has a vibe.
Yeah.
It has a really great vibe. Anyway. I'm glad that
Cuphead's cool.
People like Cuphead a lot. Bandai Namco, speaking of cool things.
Skip the Fox.
Excuse me?
The Fox game!
Oh, Tunic! Yeah, I'm going to see Tunic later this week. Tell me about Tunic.
It just looks real nice.
But what is it for people who haven't seen it?
An adventure game that's a 3D adventure game with a very cubey sort of art style, very sort of blocky, very, very cute. You play as a little fox. Looks almost Zelda-y in certain ways, I would call it, maybe. You know, action adventure.
Fox with a sword.
Brave little fox.
Yeah.
Going on adventures, and then some really cool, like, I assume that thing we see at the end of that trailer is kind of like a monster that's about to be revealed. But it was cool and like menacing in a trailer in a way that I found very good. Like, oh, this gorgeous, like perfect little world they just set up. Like, here is what this world's version of a nightmare creature would be.
Right.
And I'm into that.
Cool. Speaking of nightmare creatures, Naruto and Goku.
Oh boy.
Okay, so hold on. So the trailer Danica begins.
Is excited.
They're fighting each other now.
The
and
the trailer
that
begins.
Okay, thank you.
I wrote this down. Quote, and this is Danica. Naruto, bitch!
Can you come here?
And then a long pause, a long silence. Oh. And then the rest of the trailer revealed itself, and it was not just Naruto, which was the problem.
Can we talk? You sit in my chair.
Coming on board right now, Danica Herron, everybody.
Yay. What were your anime feelings?
Tell me about your anime feelings.
Were you surprised when Mr. Cyan came on?
That's not his name.
Who? Are you talking about
Super Cyan?
Oh. Mr. Cyan! Mr. Wacky's brother.
I was very excited. I love all the Shonen Jump games.
I'm stoked. It looked cool.
It looks extremely good.
It was at the Xbox event, and it's like one of the, it looks like one of the Naruto games where it's like the kind of like slightly third person, cel-shaded.
Yeah.
Like
every Ultimate Ninja Storm game, every Ultimate Ninja Storm game, the Naruto fighting games are good. Like, all of them are good.
What's wild, too, is we were just talking about, I forget what the crossover we were imagining. Oh, we were saying that there should be, like, Dragon Ball Z versus Capcom stuff. I was thinking,
I was like, what did you say about it, Danielle? When it showed up, you were like, Anime Infinity War.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was what it was.
Basically. And so, like, when I said to Patrick, I was like, oh, yeah, this exists. Like, the Jump games in Japan have used, like, Jump has a lot of things that get published in Jump.
Right.
It's a weekly.
It's a weekly magazine.
Magazine that has manga.
Has lots of manga.
And so I was like, oh, yeah, they do that in Japan all the time. Those games just don't often come out over here, but.
Right.
You know, anime.
Here it is.
Good attacks.
Yay.
I wish the world looked more anime. The world looks a little too, like, post-apocalyptic Times Square.
Yes.
And that's not what I'm trying to have.
It's not what you're
Are we good over there on the phone?
I'm just checking the battery.
Are you not plugged in?
Yeah, she is.
My thing died, but I'm going to grab a new one.
There you go. Here's another really fun one. Was that a yawn or excitement?
That was excitement.
You're like, did you tell me?
It was good.
Well, it's Dying Light 2,
Dying
right?
Dying Light 2, written by, or at least...
Chris Avellone.
Chris Avellone.
No, he's the lead writer, right?
He's lead writer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. Because I liked Dying Light 1. I didn't beat it. I think I got through the first main area.
I played about like 10 hours of it and was like, I like this a lot, and then just got sidetracked.
The writing was like not there.
And
like,
it was a bad story. The world building
wasn't there. Yeah. It just wasn't able to hook me. But, whew. Chris Avellone, written some of my favorite games. Well,
into the bridge!
The thing they're laying out, which is this idea that, okay, now the disaster is, like, time has moved forward, the world is moving on and recovering from this, but now, instead of being sort of a static wasteland that you keep journeying on these missions, day after day, now the missions you do and the way you choose to do them is going to change the way the world is evolving.
Oh, that's exciting. Because it's like factions and dialogue choices and like...
But there's a little glimpse into the politics of the game that maybe you need to, like, maybe this will temper your excitement just a little bit. It still sounds like exciting as a game. It'll be a cool thing to see depicted. But the scenario that was laid out is, there's basically, somewhere in the world, somebody has got, like, access to water filtration, like, and reclamation. So they're basically a supply of fresh water.
Mm-hmm. And Morton Joe, right now the fiction.
Yeah, and you can roll out to this group that has this, and you can do it on behalf of the Peacekeeper faction. And
I'm not
if
a cop,
you go, Rob. If you go to them repping for the Peacekeepers, and they're like, fuck you, we're not working with them. And you're just like, well, I guess you die then. You just kick their asses and destroy them. And you take the water. Peacekeepers take over.
Yeah.
The neighborhood and the world, like, changes.
To be.
And the Peacekeepers are reestablishing
law, like, and order.
Law and order. Like, the people are safe in the streets
finally
by day.
Finally can go buy milk.
Yeah.
Without getting shot at.
They're supplying everyone with water. Their rules are very strict. They are sort of a harsh police state, and they don't tolerate dissent. What if you went back and did it the other way? And you work with these guys and you give the water to the black market. And, oh shit, the world is overrun with criminals and it's more dangerous and it's less like rebuilt. But also there's a lot more cool exotic goods in the world. And you can like
you're gonna make
do
me
more
choose?
Business on the black market.
Between capitalism and fucking cops?
That's
yep.
This, choose your pick.
Those
your
are
poison.
The two choices.
The politics, the like really like the sort of story beat they outlined, like really they could have ended that segment with like, you know, in closing, fascism is
caps,
bad.
I swear.
But at least it's an order.
Yep.
Chris Avellone, don't let me down. There could be a third faction, like somewhere in the middle, like in the center.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I'll ask about that on Wednesday.
Oh boy.
A third way.
A third way, perhaps.
Oh,
a third way.
Something in between the two.
Right.
Extremes.
If we could just found Rationalia and govern it. With the solutions party.
Bless you.
God, thank you. Brutal. I bet that team, I have a lot of faith in Chris Avellone that comes from.
Hopefully there's some more nuance in like the actual. Yes. Like
that feels like one of those things like
play, where it's like, right, how do we have to pitch this in 2 minutes, you know?
Yeah, that's. I think we're seeing that Wednesday or Thursday. Yeah.
If this is the game that's basically Batman No Man's Land,
yeah,
I am
that'd
fucking
be so
into
good.
That.
Oh, yes. Speaking of bats, Battletoads.
There was not a Batman game at this.
Battletoads.
Nothing really shown, but hey, Battletoads is happening.
There's like a color palette.
There's colors.
Okay, that's all I'm saying. Just Cause 4.
Just Cause.
I saw the
trailer. Yeah, there's weather.
That looks cool.
It does look cool. I kind of enjoyed the, like, Just Cause is interesting. It, like, this, again, with this trailer, they're trying for kind of a grimmer, more serious tone a little bit, right? It's a little more like...
But why? Like,
this
that's not at all what I associate with Just Cause is the... Yeehaw, motherfucker. Like, let's go tie a grappling hook to this helicopter to a tank and watch it all float away and blow up.
Doesn't matter what anyone says to Rico in those cutscenes where it's like, man, we've really got to, like, you know, I feel like we've unleashed chaos and evil on this island. And we really need to think about our... And, like, it's like, okay, yeah. you get control of your character. And it's like, I'm going to fly that F-22 into that geodesic dome and shatter
it. Can I fly into the sun? I'm going to go try and fly into the sun for the next 5 minutes. I want to see what this game does when I just go up.
So if I crash that jet, are the passengers on it kind of...
Don't worry.
They're not real.
Don't even worry about it. Crash that jet.
Like, yeah, I haven't seen the trailer, but like based on your description of it, like that is so asymmetrical to the actual way the gameplay
is
structured.
One could say dissonant.
Yeah. It's bizarre. Like, why bother trying to tell that kind of story, trying to convey that kind of tone when the gameplay encourages a style of play that is completely the opposite of that? That's just a very strange stylistic choice. Like, no one's saying... Does anyone want a good story out of Just Cause? You just want more reasons to have an interesting playground. Why?
What story do you want?
I want a story that taps into the history of, like,
you want clear and
foreign intelligence, you know, agencies operating in, like, the global south and, like, Latin America
but, like,
in particular.
Turned up to 11, so it's still kind of, like, explosive and goofy.
Yeah.
But, like, still has that, like, heart
so
of, like...
But then you want satire.
Yeah, I want Saints Row the Third. Or something?
Sure.
Yeah, so I want satire.
Yeah, you want, like, touchstones, like, rooted in truth, but, like, letting you do, like, goofy shit and not feeling bad about it.
Yeah.
You want Tropic Thunder. The game. I don't know. Maybe not.
I actually have never seen Tropic Thunder.
Okay, all right.
Is it good? I know.
It's satire. Stuff. You
it's
want satire.
Satire.
I think
it's satire.
Like, Just Cause, that just seems like a strange... It's a strange approach for a series that... has like a very clear, set of gameplay tools and people, you know, look at Just Cause multiplayer. Right. Like, it's like you should be leaning into that shit and not. And Weather is a good idea. That's
Weather's
a fun.
A great,
that's a
tornadoes.
Really great way to like mix up the way that stuff works.
I was talking about how much I love the end of Superman Returns where you fight a tornado.
It's true.
I don't love that part, but you do fight a tornado at the end.
Happens.
Of the this game has tornadoes, so maybe you fight
makes
one.
You think.
Makes you think. Superman, Rico Rodriguez, they both have to fight.
The greatest crossover of all time.
They said it couldn't happen.
They said we couldn't put Superman in this. Yeah. No, some modder did.
I unleashed this whirlwind, but nay, I cannot direct it.
This is an international politics. Okay, Gears of War. Sorry, Gears 5.
Gears 5.
Not Gears of War 5. We heard from a source today. Gears of War 4 was supposed to ship as Gears 4, apparently.
Oh, boy.
And too much pressure came in. They're like, fine, Gear, we'll add
you
a
have
war.
To get War in there.
But Rod Humble?
Rod Ferguson?
Rod Fungal.
Rod Fungal!
Welcome to Waypoint, day -1 of our E3 coverage.
Rod Humble's Gears.
It's a completely different game!
Wow!
Completely different game. Rod Ferguson really wanted to be Gears 4, and... They were like, no.
What would your locust look like? just imagine.
Just imagine. You go.
Like
you do
big
anything.
Mushroom.
But apparently doubling down. Gears 5 gonna be called Gears 5, starring Kate, who was one of the main characters.
She was actually the most interesting thing about Gears 4.
Yeah.
Like they didn't go very far with this, but I remember like at the very beginning there was a whole section of that game that was like, oh, women have to start signing up to start breeding.
Right.
Like there was a whole.
Which
like,
what?
There was a little.
Oh, you
bit.
Don't know about this.
Wait, why does this
Me
keep happening on our podcast?
Lately. I don't know what's going on, but yeah, it was definitely like
they tried to touch on some interesting things
well,
in
what,
Gears
can
of War 4.
Explain what this was for people who haven't played Gears 4.
Yeah, it was just literally like you're walking around in one of the early levels of the game, and there are posters basically, and she comments on the poster. I think it's a line of dialogue, like, "Oh, I'm not signing up for that yet," but it's basically they're trying to repopulate the area so women are encouraged to.
Breed.
I need to interrupt here just because I have a question now about Gears.
Yeah.
And maybe you can, because it sounds like you're more up to speed
on
this than I am.
Gears of baby making.
So when you've got like sort of a paramilitary regime sort of encouraging people like, hey, you need to, you know, breed more and reproduce. I don't have the best associations. And did the right people win Gears?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
So yeah, the Kog are not like...
They're not great.
There's no art. They're like a...
It's not satire, but it ain't that far off.
Does it ever resolve the idea that, like, basically you're fighting for not good people?
It sort of resolves
the game. The game doesn't sort of, like, make that explicit, but it is certainly, like, part of the subtext of the game that, like, the Kog are not, like, a great organization. No. Like,
I mean, the most recent one, 4, is, like, a lot of fighting against the administration that's taken over.
Right. Okay, so Gears 4 is...
Kind of interesting, actually. That's the thing. Like, I think a lot of people wrote it off, and I understand. Like, I don't know if the world needed another Gears game, but it did at least gesture towards.
I enjoyed the writing of Gears 4, and like kind of ran out of steam on the gameplay part of about halfway through. But like this new one, where like they're pivoting, like in the same way, like a lot of stuff Microsoft's doing. Like, okay, they're not going to fundamentally change what a Gears game is, but we're going to make the main character Kate because. Spoiler, like, Gears 4 ends with, like, without outlining exactly what happens, like, the cliffhanger of Gears 4 is something where, like, Gears 5 has to pick up where, like, she is, like, central to, like, the end game of, like, wherever this story, this trilogy that they said they're doing is going. And so making her making her explicitly the main character is a smart choice. It's a very creative choice. Right. It also instantly makes the game a little more interesting, even to folks that might otherwise be like, I'm not really interested in Gears. So I'm really glad that's the choice that they made.
Was not the only Gears game we got, though.
That's true.
We had 2 others. Which one should we talk about first? Should we get popping or should we get tactical?
Wait.
Pop your tag.
I want to get funky.
You want to get funky?
Funko.
Get funky. Funko. What is this? I didn't see this.
Yeah, I did not see the trailer. Please explain.
Our internet died.
Great.
Like,
all right.
The second it was like starting
Funko
to
Pops
show
are
up.
Bad. Well, so
you know what? Here's I got a phone.
You got a phone now.
The buck stops here, but it was definitely Natalie's fault.
She may have unplugged the router.
What?
Oh, and that takes like a full like 2
How
minutes
are you
to come
frame
back.
This whole thing with like, oh yeah, the internet just went out.
Everyone's got a phone with LTE.
Look, Natalie heard Funko Pops and just like the red mist descended. She just like
hashtag
lashed out.
She was done. You know, she made the right choice.
That like she broke the plug off.
There's a gear. These look like Funko Pops, but they're Gears of War characters.
Yeah,
it's a mobile game.
Yeah,
sure,
it is.
Okay, you know what? Here's I have to admit something. Waypoint is not going to be your source. For Funko Gears of War impressions today, we failed you. None of us saw this. None of us have
He's
any.
Probably going to Giant Bomb. I'm sure they have.
Yeah, they'll talk about it.
Yeah. This really seems up their alley. Totally Jeff's got a lot of
Jeff
Funko Pops.
Jeff loves Funko Pops.
Yeah.
And Dan Reichert only has, I think, like, you know, he has pretty much every Amiibo. But I think he's even more Funko Pops.
Oh,
yeah. So. But they're missing some, so just like,
yeah, you know what?
If you have
actually,
extra Funko Pops,
you should
like,
send all your extra Funko Pops. In fact, just send all your Funko Pops to Giant Bomb.
Yep.
They're in the building. I know the East Coast building. I'm not going to say it.
Look it up.
It's out there. People send people their mailbags all the time.
Send your Funko Pops. Care of
this is going to backfire.
Austin and Patrick.
This is going to backfire.
Oh,
we just
boy.
Fucked up.
Nah.
Do you know what they're going to do to the Vice office now?
I'm going to go back to where's the Vice office?
I'm good.
They'll find you.
This side of the table is fine. Yeah, that's true.
Gears Tactics is the other game. Is that who's making that? Is that
they didn't say. They said we're excited to share Rod Fungal.
Mushroom Men fame.
Right. Rod Ferguson said that. They show like 30 seconds of footage, which we watched before, and it looks like an XCOM-y take on Gears. They said one of the differentiating factors will be it looks like maybe that like you'll be able to maybe control like the sniping or something like
that.
Yeah,
it felt curious.
It wasn't clear how that actually
goes
mechanic
in the first
works.
Person when you're aiming shots. I
And they said boss battles are gonna be a big thing, which like that could be
we'll see
whatever.
We'll see.
But yeah, it's not clear. That's at least, what they've showed was more interesting than if they were doing a Halo Wars version of Gears of War. I could at least be convinced into like
a tactics game,
which
is in line with Gears in general, the kind of cover based stuff.
It's slower.
Like I've always thought that games like Gears and Mass Effect 2 and 3, I guess 2, helped open the door for the XCOM Enemy Unknown to find an audience because people had spent a few years doing cover-based shooting and thinking about angles and stuff like that already.
They played Matt Hazard, so they really knew.
Very right. Exactly. Totally. God, that game. Jesus Christ. Other small things. Elder Scrolls Online and Fallout 4 going to Game Pass. Yep. Which cool. Master Chief Collection also Game Pass. And then we got a brief mention of the next Xbox. Like very brief kind of throwaway line of just
oh,
like,
they're making another one of those.
Yeah, exactly. They're making another one, which like, yeah, of course.
Although but I will we're say getting like, there. One Xbox of the conversations that you and I had, Austin, was trying to figure out sort of the interesting positioning that both Sony and Microsoft have, right? So I think Sony's in like a pretty interesting spot where they can easily pivot to a PlayStation 5 and be like, all of our games are come out on the PlayStation 5 and like maybe they have backwards compatibility, but like you can push the Pro and the PS4 side pretty cleanly. Whereas with like the Xbox One and the Xbox One X, like the Xbox One X is like pretty new. You're not going to be able to tell people your games don't run on Xbox One X whenever the successor, the true successor to like the Xbox One line comes. So then my thought was maybe the way where they end up landing is that the Xbox One disappears. The Xbox One X becomes
right.
the lower end model.
Yeah.
And then the new premier box is, you know.
The Xbox One Y.
And it's like, where do they draw that line? Is it? Why?
Why? Why not?
Ooh.
I don't know. Anyway.
So.
Yeah. And then it was like straight out of a Ubisoft Watch Dogs announcement. Thanks, everybody. It's going to do it for us today. And they're like, oh, I'm in. Hacker voice.
That was all right.
It was all right.
For like Microsoft especially, yeah. Like, it was all right.
There's this thing that was extra all right about it, which is that they snuck in a letter to fans, either at the very beginning or the very end of that, of the trailer for Cyberpunk 2077, the new CD Projekt Red game. Obviously, CD Projekt Red makes the Witcher series, obviously.
It's not just a letter. Like
it's a long...
Also, there were good old games codes to redeem Game of the Year editions of The Witcher 3.
Cool. That's awesome.
It's a really long letter that does just some really good like situational context of this game.
It speaks to concerns people would have from the trailer in that fucking letter. So like this is a letter, or the trailer is in engine. Of people and places in the world of Night City, which is kind of this one of the central cities in the Cyberpunk universe, which again is an old Art Halsorian game, Cyberpunk 2020, Cyberpunk 20. I think there's an earlier one before. I played 2020 and then I played third edition. It's 2077, so it's like 50 years in the future, 57 years in the future from that.
You know, future.
Holograms, kids playing stuff in VR.
Technology.
Hyper technology. Businessman's faces just on fucking fire.
Woman putting makeup on her face and then I don't have a mouth.
So good.
Yep.
She's like, hey, I'm doing my makeup. And like, also my mouth isn't attached right now. It's so good. Amazing. So good. Just like visual, like theme setting, tone setting, tone piece. And the narrator kind of sucked. The narrator was like a shitty cyberpunk bro.
The letter apparently outlined that like there will be a character creation, which is like it was funny how their letter. There was also like a line in the letter that said like, "Hey, so like all these like chase scenes and like all this stuff that's in the trailer, like we just got to make a trailer."
Yeah,
like,
it's very
good. Like they had a line that was like, "This is going to be a single player like RPG. Like this is the game you think you want from us. We're making that game.
Yeah. Don't worry, nerds.
I mean,
they also did the letter, but no DRM.
Yeah,
and like bunch of free DLC.
Yep.
It's like what
that's
embedded
so
into a trailer show with the Microsoft press conference. Like what? Ah,
there's a moment you talk about like a letter for nerds. There's a moment in this trailer, like a minute 12 in, where a character goes up into covers. A woman who has like a black like undercut like. Cover like Flock of Seagulls 80s haircut goes up and gets cover in an alleyway, and that's literally the cover art to Cyberpunk 2020, a book which was printed 25 years ago.
Good.
And it's like in this fucking trailer, it's like my heart were like, oh, me
yeah,
I'm
yeah
here.
The moment that happened you looked at me and explained like,
we've come a long way from the teaser trailer with the model with the blade
arms. Yes,
we sure have. And there's driving in this trailer. I don't know if there's going to be a vehicle. Like, I'm so curious to see what this game is.
Knowing as we do your love for flying cars.
Well, the thing is, they're not flying. He's driving a car. It's on a highway. Because you know what? There's still going to be fucking roads in the future. Not everyone's going to be able to afford a flying car. Flying cars are going to be expensive. We know that. From science.
Oh.
From science.
From
science. It's also interesting.
Read Marx, you know.
The science of Marx.
10 bundles of linen equal 1 flying car. Obviously. I'm excited to see more of that. I wanted the gameplay trailer, obviously.
I'm presuming, yeah, we have an appointment to see, to meet with CD Projekt Red.
On
presumably,
Tuesday.
Presumably, which is, you know,
Tuesday.
This game.
They have a booth.
Tuesday for,
yes. For real.
For an hour, and then we're interviewing them after that, so... yes. Presumably, they're not just going to show us that trailer on loop for an hour.
And then you're going to play Gwent.
And then we're going to play Gwent.
Oh my gosh, there's a trailer in this? Just like, so, the trailer is... There's the trailer.
And here's
Gwent.
Here's Gwent. I mean, they could. They could.
I have been in worse bait and switch meetings at E3.
Me too.
So.
Same.
I'm very curious to see what that game plays like and what it
first
is.
First person, third person. But first person, third person. What do you think? We made bets before the trailer played. Yeah. The trailer didn't answer it.
Third person.
So there were serious...
The rumors have been first.
Oof. So the thing that makes me now think third... is thinking about character creation and fashion.
What's the point of it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So much of Cyberpunk, so much of that trailer is like, yo, look at that guy's jacket. It has like that glowing tiger on the back.
It's fucking iconic bandana. Yeah.
Yes. Give me the most iconic ever, like LED bandana.
Oh, boy.
The collar.
That collar situation was really good. Christ. It's so fucking ridiculous. And it's like so good for me to see that stuff after looking at the fashion in Detroit and like the...
right.
Just like dry... cold. Just like, no, this is just turned to 11. Everything's on fire. Everything, like, including people's faces.
Yeah.
The CEO faces on fire.
I need to go rewatch that scene.
I know. It's not legit, like, and it shouldn't, because I played Syndicate. I've seen this move before. But
chip rips.
It's still weirdly chilling to see someone just, like, jacked in and their fucking brain is sparking.
100%.
And it's like, oh, that's bad. Like, that's actually scary to think about. Like, if the world requires you to, like, function with these weird fucking augs and... someone just fucking you, like doing a DNS.
Yeah.
You got hacked.
There's no date on that. There's no window on that, right?
No, in the letter, they do. Well.
Oh, 2077. No.
That's Crackdown 3.
Yeah, okay, right. Sorry.
Yeah, the letter said, we don't know quite yet, but we wouldn't, essentially, like, we wouldn't be talking about it if we didn't think we were, not in the home stretch, but like, it sounds like next holiday would be it's probably next holiday, and then actually it's probably like spring 2020 is like would be my games always ship 6 months later after this. I'm just saying, but it could be the next.
I mean, it's better to know, right?
That game is big enough that if they wanted to stake out October 2019, they could pull a Red Dead Redemption, and people would have to stay away from Cyberpunk. Yeah. I think they're big enough now. They're not quite Rockstar, but
no,
they're big
but they're
enough,
big enough.
To muscle around.
Especially a game.
This
like,
game is going
to
be big.
This is super cynical. A game with guns in it is going to do well. Like, it's the world we live in, and The Witcher doesn't.
And there's
have
nothing else like it.
Right.
What are you going to say? No.
Okay. It was a joke.
No, it was just, like, if this hits, they are Rockstar, though. Like, if this hits the way it could, like,
you know, Rockstar doesn't have a storefront, doesn't have like good old games, some GOG or whatever,
right?
Like, in some ways, they are. I would love to see something so successful that they could become an A tier competitor to Steam instead of like they're competing in Steam. They're in the marketplace.
They're not competing. They're an alternative.
They're an alternative. I would say you're right. That's fair. I'd love to see them step up and become a competitor to Steam, and also to continue to like make cool shit. So
yes.
All right, that is the end of the Xbox conference. We are going to take a break so I can get water
or beer
and go. Well, we have.
I mean, those are kind of one and the same. Takate is
on.
Yeah.
I need to sober up.
I need to get another Takate.
I've done that. An authentic, full flavored lager. Takate is the bold taste of Mexico for over 70 years. I'm not doing an ad read for Takate.
Is this the bold taste of Mexico?
I just remember we didn't. They didn't pay us.
Yeah.
Yet.
I mean,
reach out.
I've never had a Takate.
Get that money.
Get that money.
Get that money.
It was the only
Juju.
It was the only beer in my grandfather's like fridge.
All right.
So like for me, like as far as I know,
it
like,
is the bold taste of Mexico.
There you go. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be back on like
Starfield.
We'll be back to talk about Starfield.
Prey.
We're gonna talk about Prey.
Yeah.
I'm gonna flip a fucking table. We're gonna talk about
Rob's
Prey.
On my side. Rob's on my side.
I'm doing my best to stay out of his house. I'll be
flipping
over here.
A table.
Be right back, everybody.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we are back with our day negative one coverage of E3 here in Los Angeles.
Is that what they call it now?
What? Day negative one?
No,
E3. E3.
E negative three.
E2, because it's negative one.
Right.
We lost one. After doing Microsoft, we all got food independently. I heard that y'all got tacos. Is that what happened over here? Their tacos
from where? The same place?
We went to a really Guisado's. Good place.
What was it?
Guisado's out by Dodger Stadium.
Oh, awesome. I had horchata that was real green and had cold brew in it.
Hell yeah.
One of my favorite places.
That sounds good as shit. That sounds good as shit. We got it in our heads.
We fucked up. But not willingly.
No, we were like, yo, this place that does like spicy chicken, hot chicken, is like.
It had 3,200 reviews on Yelp. It was like halfway from where we were going and where we're at.
It was like perfect. We could swing by.
Yeah. And
swing by, pick up some chicken.
3,200 reviews on Yelp. And it was basically 5 stars. Unprecedented.
Howlin' Rays.
And we kind of get dropped off in a weird spot. We're in like, I don't know if it's like an actual, maybe it's Chinatown. I don't know districts of LA.
We're in Chinatown.
Well, I just don't know if that's where we were. But there was a lot of Chinese restaurants.
Like cool Chinese restaurants that like moved
it
into. Smelled great. And then it moved into like a mall, like an outside, inside mall. Like there was a.
Yeah.
There weren't doors, but there was a roof.
And then.
And they're like, all these little restaurants. This would look great.
Yeah. And then so we're trying to find the spot we're looking for. And. We noticed a line. And then I had like a sinking feeling in my stomach. I was like,
that's and it wasn't
the
chicken.
Line for, it was chicken. No, well, saying, the line for
the,
chicken.
The sinking feeling was the absence of chicken.
And then we quickly discovered it was a 2.5 to 4 hour line for Howlin' Rays chicken, which is, I guess, standard practice every day for
that place. I want that chicken now so bad, though.
Because I feel like it's a dare.
Yeah.
Like, could it be that good? Well, you read a review that said yes, but I don't believe them.
It was like,
there is no chicken that is worth standing in line for 4 hours.
That place, Joel off mic just said, that's not true.
There's any food in the universe.
No, I cannot think of any food that I would wait 4 hours for.
No.
What food would you wait 4 hours for?
Not if you were actually hungry.
Good barbecue, because it takes a long time.
But are you waiting in line for 4 hours? Or are you like ordering the food and then waiting for
hours? So I think my concern about places is that it's like, oh, the line is 4 hours.
Right? Is it just the food trendy?
Are
you waiting in line because other people are waiting in line?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 4 hour line sort of bespeaks a fetishization of like comfort food. That's great.
Well, the moment we got into our Lyft, I was telling you were picking up our food
from Chago, which was. Great.
Really good.
Really good.
So we actually, it turned out fine.
Yes.
Asian fusion.
It
was like a Asian Mexican fusion. Yeah.
Really good.
Delicious.
Pork belly was,
I had this amazing burrito. It was really good. But, so I'm waiting for you while the last of our food gets ready. And I was telling him about the line. And he's like, you got to go there. He's like, I'm from here. Like, people just stand in that line to stand in that line. He's like, it's good food. He's like, I'm not saying it's not good chicken. He's like, it's really good chicken. But he's like, nah, just go to Dave's. Hot chicken. I think that's it. It's in Hollywood. He's like, you wait 25 minutes and it's just as good.
And you get your Dave's.
We should go to get some Dave's.
You go to Honey's, it waits 5 minutes.
It's also damn good. Yeah, fine. The thing that I like about this trip so far is we've gone to like two local spots.
Really good food during a trip in which I normally just eat
garbage.
That said, all day, we went to a meeting when we can't talk about the game, but the meeting we went to they just bought all sorts of
like,
food bars. Yeah. They're there and they're like, take as many as you want.
Do you want a Luna bar?
So I took two things and like, I'll put that in my bag. And instead I just ate the two bars during the demo and then just grabbed two more bars.
They're like, take more, please, water, whatever you want.
A Clif Bar. I need my sword.
There were Clif Bars in there. If you want them, you got it. And it was a good thing. Because we kept thinking we'd go to events that had food. And none of them had real food.
No food. Oh. Yeah.
You recall I prophesied something about the event I would be attending this morning. What would be there for breakfast? I was indeed correct.
Oh, good.
The tiny little muffins that were the size of like
a silver dollar. You described them as being like too moist or impossibly moist.
You know what?
But not
I'll
a good way.
I'll give them this.
You actually didn't say moist. You said impossibly humid, which is a beautiful way to describe a muffin that feels wet but not
moist.
That's
a big,
in a good
round,
way.
Wet McMuffin right there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'll
give them this. They were not in fact like humid.
Okay. Good. Good. We came back with food. We all sat around the TV and we watched Bethesda.
And Danica props for
this
the amazing spread.
Incredible.
And she had plenty of time to make it.
What's
she had
that
about
mean?
34 Why? Seconds. No. Oh, right. No. Okay. Go for it.
No. So, like, we're in a bit of not quite a food desert, but like there's not a ton of great supermarkets within like a 5 minute drive
there's
or
a
like
CVS.
A 20 minute walk.
Right. That's right.
It.
Hey, America, fucking get your shit right.
Yep.
Yeah.
People, working class folks need grocery stores.
That's yeah.
Great. Please help us not just shop in the bodega.
Yeah, 100%. So we went to, we ended up sort of making a journey downtown to a Whole Foods, which is a decision I question. But nevertheless, we go down there and we had to hurry.
Did they have Boo Boo Lubu?
You know, funnily enough, they did not.
Huh.
And I think really if organic Boo Boo Lubu were sort of locally sourced in this community, I think they would have had it. But sadly, the distribution deal hasn't come together.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we had to hustle through that, like, Whole Foods to get, like, nutritious, like, healthy food. Because it was like, well, we do not want to miss the start of the Bethesda conference.
When did you think it was started?
At 6 o'clock.
Aha.
Yes.
Somebody wrote that down in our schedule.
Yeah.
That's what they said it did.
Yeah. So
it did start at the stream started at 6.
Anyway, so we're like hustling through this and like just what do we need? Just bread. Hustle. Like, do we need butter? Yes, we don't know where butter is in this strange store. So to hell with it, we won't have butter. We got peanut butter. That counts.
That's butter, so butter in the name.
Like, what are we trying to impress people? No. just eat the gut.
Just put out the peanut butter and say be happy there's something.
Yeah. So like, you know,
Your father works hard
for this peanut butter.
We sprint through there. Somehow there's a miscommunication at a certain point. Like, every one of us had two types of baguette tucked under our arm. And so we rush back. We race in through the door, turn it on. The Bethesda conference has just started. No, it is not. It is a pre-conference with highlights from their previous E3
presentation. Like, who does that? 4 years.
Who
That's
does
the thing.
That? It's like, man, remember all those trailers that like you used to love? And then the games came out. Those trailers are pretty good, huh?
To their credit, I liked the two ladies that they had doing this. They were a community manager and a content strategist, I believe. And they had a lot of enthusiasm, and they were selling it, and they had puppies.
Oh, word.
There was a part.
That sounds
great.
There was
a scene where each one of them had a puppy, a very cute dog, very cute small dog, even though Brody wanted to get out of the lap.
Brody
was
had
like,
been told that Brody would be attending the Bethesda E3 conference, and there was no fucking Bethesda E3 conference, and Brody was like, I need to go eat my kibble and take a shit.
Exactly. You're correct.
But while we're working through all this, Danica turned all our completely like random grab bag of ingredients and like foodstuffs into a beautiful like spread.
It's a spread, yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
Fruit
awesome. Like watermelon
cheese.
Wedges, a cheese platter.
Oh my God.
It was
very good.
It was real good.
That was great. And then Bethesda actually started.
Yes.
At some undetermined time.
At some undetermined, I think it was 7. 6:30?
6:30.
Because I thought it was 7. And I was like, we got all the time
in
the world.
I don't know how I got. I was like, nah, it's 6:30.
I thought it was an hour later. Y'all
we
were
all
there
thought it was 6.
Very good. Just, oh, you know why? Right in the center. Patrick Clefford.
Right,
yeah, 6:30.
You found it right in
7.
The
dead center.
You found your happy place.
Third way.
Turns out the right answer is always in the middle of two options that you haven't considered very much.
We started off with Rage 2. We saw what Avalanche has to offer.
Well, we started with
Andrew
WK. Please.
Yeah. True. True.
With an audience that could not give less of a shit about
it. Such a bummer because he got me going. He was like,
get up off your goddamn.
Yeah. Go to a concert. Clap.
Enjoy
dance.
Your party Harding.
Maybe if those folks, if that crowd had not been cooled off by 20 minutes of let's look at old E3 trailers, maybe they would have been like, fucking Harding. You think they had to watch it
too? Look, oh, yeah.
You know what you have never heard Andrew WK say on Twitter? And he says everything is partying. Nowhere does he say watching old E3 trailers is partying.
Look, there was a dog named Brody and there was a dog named Brian Jr. And Brian Jr. Brian was happy great. To be there. You know what? We can all be Brody or we can be Brian Jr.
Wow.
All right?
I like this.
Mom showed up and mom says, we're going to have fun on this trip to Disneyland if it kills me.
Danielle's really only doing this because she knows where this is all going.
Yeah. She's already like laying the groundwork.
I have an argument. You see this? I have an argument that I have laid out.
That's a good argument.
It is actually an excellent argument.
Shooting my cuffs. I'm like, all right, let's do this.
Okay, well, let's start with big picture stuff then. You're right. Big picture, besides you wish it had started earlier, what were your feelings about?
He'll think about that 5 years from now. Remember that one conference that wouldn't fucking start?
I needed to take a shit.
I could have found butter. I could have found butter in that fucking store.
That's what it is.
Tell me about Bethesda. Big picture, what's your takeaways? What were your feelings?
Land of Lakes. Just for days.
Is that what Bethesda stands
yeah,
for?
Yeah, Bethesda.
Bethesda. Land of Lakes.
365 even. I'd have taken it.
They had a strong showing. They showed some things I'm very, very, very extremely interested in. And they showed things that other people are very, very interested in.
Sorry, I'm still laughing at Rob's butter jokes.
You know, it's good. I'm happy.
What do y'all think? Bethesda.
I'm on a roll. Like big butter.
Picture. I'll say they stuck the landing. What?
Something's on the roof.
That was from my room.
Maybe it was a mimic, Rob.
Yeah, I would say a typhoid, or was that what they're called?
Typhon.
It was Typhoid Mary in your room because she couldn't eat the butter.
What'd you think of the show?
They stuck the landing on the hardest possible thing, I thought, 100%. With Fallout 76, which we'll get into, you know, a more sort of like breaking into why I thought it was successful, but I thought they stuck the landing on regardless of whether you think the game is for you or not.
Yes.
I thought they did a really good job of communicating what that thing is. I'm gonna spoil too much of my thoughts for later stuff, but I thought it was a really, really good conference. Like, kind of touched on a bunch of things, and even they were even pretty snappy about moving on from the stuff that they're obligatory. Like, look, we know you're not here for Quake. Champions, but they're not here for ESO.
There are people who like those games.
They have communities. ESO makes like a ton of money for them. So it's like, I know that's not what you're here for, but you got to give those people those due, because there's like a lot of people that work hard on those games, and they should be allowed to have 5 minutes on stage where, you know, you do some polite clapping.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really impressive. And specifically, they do a really good job of harnessing their like really dedicated community, getting them involved at the actual events. Like, you can tell that most of the people there are hardcore Bethesda fans, and like, it shows in the presentation, it shows in the way they talk to their audience, and I thought they continue to show that they're very, I wouldn't have thought Bethesda would be the company that was doing like really good press conferences until they started doing them. I thought it seemed like kind of a goofy idea, but I think they're actually doing,
especially they step up as a publisher and diversify what those games look like. So Rob,
I think for me at the end of the conference, it occurred to me, like, when you were talking earlier in this podcast about salesmanship, the art of sales and the games being played, it made me realize what I really liked about the Bethesda press conference is that a great sale does feel like everyone's walking away a winner on this.
That's
one.
Exactly it.
Like, you needed something, I have it, but if it's not what you need, I'm not going to sell it to you. And like, now a salesman obviously has an interest, like, we want to sell it to you, but
to be clear, that's not a good sale. Isn't one in which everyone wins.
Yeah.
If you're a salesman, a good sale is one in which everyone feels as if they've won.
Yeah.
And you won more. That is what sales is about.
Right. And the Bethesda
and if someone conference, tells you otherwise, they're trying to be a salesman.
Right. And the Bethesda conference kind of felt like a really good series of sales pitches, because they're giving you context. They're not just like pretending that everything they're throwing out there is like for you specifically. They're speaking to their respective communities and also unpacking some of the thinking and goals
explaining the why, right?
Yes.
So like if like the Elder Scrolls Blade specifically,
right?
Right? Like contrast that to EA's presentation Command of CNC Mobile, right? Yep. Like there is a way where EA comes out and contextualizes, look, we have a vast array of properties. Like we're not sure where the future of Command & Conquer as like a mainstay strategy series is. We're always thinking in those directions. We value your feedback. Like, please let us know what you'd like to see in the future. Oh, you're angry.
No, you're hitting the table.
Oh, and you're also probably angry too.
Kroger brand even.
Brody, be a Brian.
Why would they have Kroger brand at the Whole Foods?
Even, no, they went.
They ran out.
I don't know that.
365 is a totally decent brand.
They told someone to go down.
Yeah,
the
Mary,
streets.
Go down to Kroger. We are out of butter.
Mary,
bring back the butter. We'll put it in the Whole Foods.
I didn't know they had Kroger everywhere.
I don't think they do. I don't think they do. It's a really far errand. Anyway,
and there's a way to contextualize that, and then say so. But in the meantime, we're trying an experiment. We're doing the CNC Mobile thing, and we hope you're interested. Here's why we made it. Here's the reason we made it.
We think that this is a cool thing. We like think about how to design these games a lot. We love playing them. Like there are ways to sell that and to sell the enthusiasm or to present the enthusiasm. Like if you want to think about it less,
here's what we think is interesting about this, rather than here's why you should be interested in it.
Less cynically, there's someone at Bethesda whose job it is to be a salesperson and to be like, I'm going to sell these people the vision. One of their jobs is to put people in front of you who are not salespeople, but who are passionate about projects that they're working on and who can communicate that eloquently. And that's what happened there, where it's like, I don't care at all about Quake Champions. I wasn't a Quake player when I was young. I'm not now. But for that period of time, I could tell that guy was talking about a community that he really liked, was talking about a game that he's worked on or has been in proximity to for a while. And that came across, and that felt genuine from him. And it was sort of a volley in a larger rhetorical, a larger sales pitch, right? A larger rhetorical, like, fusillade, right? Like, that's how that worked. And that's part of what makes that work. Whereas when I think about the EA conference, it's just a mess. It's just, like, even if I'm interested in, genuinely really interested in, doesn't cohere into anything, and doesn't have that same, like, I still think that I like the Anthem stuff more than most, but, like, would have rather the Anthem stuff be feel like the Fallout 76 stuff, which we'll talk about again a little bit later.
The Bethesda folks feel like they're interested in the thing they're selling, which is never a thing you get at EA.
Right.
EA's like, fuck, we just look, here's the bullet point. Just go, take it. Like,
there's a degree of, like,
and this is EA, right? Like, I think, you know, I don't know how Bioware would handle it, but, like, this is, like, a consistent thing with EA specifically. Yeah. Like, there's a world where you imagine, like, if Bioware was given a chance to, like, sell this game themselves, maybe they would do it differently. I don't know if that's the case.
There's a thread on Twitter now from one of the lead devs of that game that is just like, all right, let me explain what this game is beat by beat by beat. Which is, like, so
that's frustrating.
It's so frustrating. You can tell that team is probably super frustrated. They're like,
imagine them watching the Fallout 76 thing going, fuck, we could have done this.
To be clear, this thread comes from before that, but the thread about Anthem, it, like, literally opens.
Yeah, I'm not thinking of his response it's just illustrative.
But it literally opens with him being like, here are the conflicts between these major factions. Here are the big picture ideas that were not present. They're called javelins. Here's what they, like, it's really, like, heartbreaking.
And part of this entire pitch is holistic about Bethesda as a whole well. And it did begin, interestingly, with a sort of little package, a little video presentation about, like, work-life balance and the fact that, oh, look at all the different types of people who work at Bethesda, and showing people going to yoga and running and having families and things like that. The implication being our teams have work-life balance, so they make better games and they're more passionate about things, and, you know, passion being a word that is loaded, obviously, in this context.
Just talked about it,
That said, like, if you have work-life balance, you can bring more passion to your work, like, good version of that word.
That is what they're selling here. That is absolutely, like, what they're selling by using that presentation.
Yeah.
And last year they had a similar video where, like, they had the families of people that work on those games.
Who, like,
they
proud.
That is part of there's a cynical way to look at this stuff, but I think there is, like, a deeply human, empathetic way to look at some of their, I think it does come from a good place.
Right.
Even if it's part of a sales pitch, like, it is people who care a lot, seem to care a lot about the stuff they're making, and, like, they want to present, like, why they why they love this stuff as much as they do.
And they were showing like service workers as well. They were showing like the guy, the cook, you know, in a kitchen at a studio, things like that, that were very like, all
right. Yeah, but then we added a wrinkle to it. Yeah.
Which is like Rob.
Yeah, I was the wrinkle. No. I mean, that's great. Like, show the service workers, but at the same time, like, is the person working in your commissary a Bethesda employee with full, like, employee benefits, or are they a contractor with a different company that doesn't get any
I'm curious.
Yeah. Like, because it's, like, one is you're doing it for optics, really. Like, yeah, it's a little bit of a gesture, but also it's mostly optics. The other is, well, shit, like, that's kind of walking the walk.
It is. And, like, and guess what?
Because Bethesda's rich.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, if they are. Like, yes, they're rich.
I know.
And so it's like, if you're showing that and it's just the optics, then that's then even more insidious because you have the money to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's talk about games. Not because we shouldn't talk about this other stuff.
Right.
But because we are going to continue talking about that other stuff throughout everything else we do. Rage 2, Andrew WK plays.
Yep.
We got a party started. And then we saw a quick Rage 2, like, overview trailer and then like a gameplay session that I kind of had a little bit of trouble following to some degree.
Same.
It felt like they were trying to recapture the magic of the Wolfenstein trailer from last year and it just completely fucking misfired.
I mean, that Wolfenstein trailer is like an all-time good fucking trailer.
But in terms of the like quick cuts, like what the hell is happening, and then like weird asides, like what is this? Like it's funny but also like unsettling. They're trying for those beats, but this time it just didn't work because there was no, I think, conceptual framework for what this game is or what it's trying to do.
I wanted a person with a controller to play that game on stage.
Yeah.
To like explain, hey, you have powers. Like, it was one of those things in that trailer. So it's a first-person shooter.
Yeah, at the
end of this trailer, it's a first-person shooter. It unlike something like Bioshock or lots of other games that we've played in the last few years, Call of Duty or something like that, Far Cry. There are lots of enemies in some instances. It's very fast-paced. It looks a little bit more like Doom than like Far Cry 5. I was at 2. That's where my head is.
We were talking about Far Cry 2 this morning with a cab driver.
We sure were.
Oh, good.
Bright and colorful. Lots of... pink, lots of blue. At least that one faction has like lots of spray paint, and again, like pink and blue smoke. Lots of like big enemies that are like, you know, radioactive.
It was a gender reveal party that went very wrong.
After the kind of like big, here's what the world looks like, and the asteroid fell, and there's cars, and you could drive any car you want. Gets into this gunfight. That's kind of a rolling gunfight through a kind of the outside of a building where there's like a bunch of.
I'm containers. Thinking broke,
were they just shipping containers? Yeah. Oh, fuck.
And it was the very aesthetically boring for a game that like is being pitched as like, things are so zany. Yeah. And like the trailer was not particularly good at showing
like,
what is wild and interesting and diverse and eclectic about this game. Like when it... I'm going to see and play that game this week. I'm hoping... doing that part maybe will convey a little bit more about like where is the Avalanche Just Cause 2 because it's from that team.
Because right now it's Brink.
Right.
Right.
Which is like another game that I wanted to be fantastic that looked like it was supposed to be stylish and had some cool ideas and then it was just a disappointment. Is that still free to play or is that gone?
Brink, really?
Oh. Also, you play as a guy named Walker in Where's Rage the lie? 2. You play Walker, the Last Ranger, and every time it's like Walker, huh? What?
It was like Papa Bear.
If they get a character named Papa Bear, I'm suing.
I mean, that's the vibe. That you kind of get the vibe though, like right? Walker is operant conditioned and is basically just puppet on a string. Like
I don't look
at these punks. They seem harmless, but you need to murder all of them and get me that thing.
Yeah,
And like so,
backfire. Definitely just a backfire.
Yep.
One's backfire, two's gunplay.
Uh-huh. Just one, so we're good.
We've all seen Way of the Gun, right?
Uh-huh. Continue.
That was it.
Okay.
Two's gunplay.
Oh.
Fireworks.
Pop. Walker, Last Ranger. That's the character. That's the bit. Gets sent in places. Does seem to have, like, a handler who can't be trusted. But then does get, like, a weird... like force push attack power at the end of that trailer. I was like, show me that immediately. Show me the tools. Show me the things that are fun to play with. Show me the toys. You know, and I wanted more from that, but we'll see. Hands on. I hope it's good.
Yeah, they said it's coming out spring 2019. Again, I generally like everything that Avalanche does, so I'm kind of just hoping right now that the marketing has been sort of a misfire as opposed to the game itself.
Totally.
So, fingers crossed.
Totally. Then that went into Elder Scrolls Legends, the card game, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, has a community. That person seemed very enthusiastic. I don't know anything about that card
game. There's a few community people leading sections of the presentation, which, again, is a nice contrast from the EA approach where, like, a community person's proper position is under a bus. but, like, here they were allowed to sort of take center stage. And...
Is that from the David Cage thing? Is that where... Keep community leaders.
It's one of the paths.
Okay, I see.
Oh, boy.
Can you get a DLC that makes it so that you can just redo it again and do the bad thing? I want to talk about the DLC so bad, or that patch so bad, but it spoils a thing in that game, so I won't talk about it. In that...
No.
You make a choice and there's...
No.
Stay on target.
Doom Eternal. Been out like 2 weeks.
Doom Eternal.
Hell yeah, Doom
Eternal.
Doom Eternal.
Talk to me about Doom Eternal.
Well, it seems like Doom Hell on Earth. We don't see any gameplay. They said they're going to show it proper at game at QuakeCon, which is how they revealed the first game, which so it makes sense.
Right.
That game's probably next summer or something like that, if I had to throw a dart. But yeah, that team is super talented, and I've been extremely excited to see where they take that from here. It was it was weird and surprising and fun.
That is
and
how you do the announcement when you don't have anything to show.
Yeah, yeah, that's how you. The Jedi Fallen Order is like have just something like all.
Honestly,
that,
a logo would have helped Jedi Fallen Order, but like if they
just get, some motion graphics,
hat was logo.
You know,
was there a hat?
Wasn't there a hat?
I might. He was wearing a hat, but
did
I don't
say
it
Jedi
didn't,
Fallen.
No, it did not.
It was dark. Though.
I think it said
black
respawn.
And like,
it said
I get
respawn.
It. Someone messaged me and was like, "That's a waste of time and money and resources." These are big publishers. I'm not saying Respawn should make those things. I'm not saying, like, take someone off of level design duty.
No,
to go.
EA has a marketing department.
Yes.
This is what
they
do.
This is what they do.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
those departments are for. It's what publishers are for. You go to somewhere like Rockstar. Rockstar's entire New York office is people doing that stuff, right?
Doing video capture.
Doing video capture.
And doing motion graphics.
Go read the interview on Please Don't Die from David Lewinsky interviewed one of the people who did all of the video capture and all like the back of box art stuff for those games. Like, people's jobs are to produce those things. Make one of those things. Get people excited. Because I think a version of that that would have had, you know, the Death Star rising and then a lights. Like, that's all.
Something
it's
that gets
so
people talking about what your game might be. And, and this trailer, like, doesn't say anything about what Doom's going to be other than showing some familiar enemies, some enemies that weren't in the original Doom, and then, like, cuts to, like, some skyscrapers. And then, like, immediately makes you think, oh, like, they're going to invoke actual Doom 2 Hell on Earth. And actually kind of make good
so
a little bit of what that game didn't.
And I think that there's a real material reason to do this, which is it can communicate tone, it can communicate atmosphere, it can communicate some basic things, setting and focus and all that stuff. But there is something really powerful. We talk to a lot of game developers at conferences like these. And one of the things you hear again and again, or you just see, is how happy they are. They get to show their shit off. That they've worked on, and that they can feel the energy and the excitement from people seeing their projects for the first time. This isn't unique to video games. This is talking to people who make movies. This is talking to people who write stories. This is talking to people who do anything. Like creative endeavors are often driven by the back and forth between audience and creator. And if I was on that team, and what I got was like, oh yeah, my boss's boss was like, yeah, it's set between episodes 3 and 4. And no one knows what that means.
The dark times.
The dark times. And the response was like, haha, he's a meme now because it went weird. That's not exciting. That's not, it doesn't make me feel good about the work I've been doing.
Especially when you know, like, we're not actually going to talk about this game again in public for another fucking year.
For another year. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so when you look at something like the Doom Eternal reveal, I can imagine that team be like, yes, look, that's it. Oh, that looks so good. You know, like, Jenny worked so hard on this little teaser. It looks so good. Thank
you
so much for nailing it.
Wait till they see the Easter eggs we put in there that, like, people talking about what's
actually
going to be in this game.
Exactly. And so, like, you go from and just seeing people get hyped about it gives you that energy, lets you know that the work that you've been doing will have an audience. And, like, that's a material, real thing. And it's one of the jobs of a publisher to support their studios and their developers.
Right.
That game seems like it'll be hell on earth and cool, right?
Yeah, like, I'm curious, like, mechanically, my hope is, so they did say what happens if the Doomslayer, which is the name given to the mythological entity, the Doomslayer, that exists within the Doom canon. So I read this story for Kotaku a couple of years back, where there's a way to connect all the Doom games, including Doom 3, using Doom 64 as a linchpin.
Oh.
And then it connects Doom 1, 2, 3, 6, well, 64 fits in between 2, because 64 takes place after 2. I don't remember all the specifics, but there's a way to tie all the canon together with, like, things that are put in diary entries in the new Doom, and so I'm hoping this new one acknowledges my dream.
Did you see the new thing with Flat Earthers?
What?
That they think...
They shot a rocket off recently. That.
The polar thing? Did you see the polar thing? They think it's ice. They think it's a wall of ice at the end of the world, and there are other Earth-like flat...
This is Game of Thrones.
Is that how that goes? No. But look, you zoom out and you're in space and you like go over and then there's another Earth flat. Like there's another.
There are other Earths?
No, they're all in the same polar field.
Oh.
But it's like if we flew up in the air and went over, I don't know, 100,000 miles or whatever, there would be another little. It's like it's almost like little ponds inside of. I know that's what you sound like.
Yeah.
When you talk about Doom 64.
Just go read my article. It all makes sense.
It all makes sense. It all makes sense.
I can't tell you how it all connects right now, but I can feel it. But I know it connects.
I can feel it.
That's like Zelda timelines, right? That Nintendo finally was
but
like, all right.
That's different because Nintendo has actually made an argument that's for true. That timeline being legitimate.
That shit is wild.
It's actually, yeah.
It's, yeah. That one so splits off with like
three
timelines.
Yeah.
There's three timelines.
It
yeah,
Software
yeah.
has not acknowledged that like this
your
is legitimate. Yeah, they... I was writing for Kotaku, an outlet they do not talk to. Now hopefully, they accept appointments for me.
Right.
Maybe I can get some fucking answers when
finally.
I go to see... When I go ask the Rage 2 team, you work with id. I'm going to print... Can I print out my article? Read this!
Two questions for you, Todd.
You
one,
pull in a whiteboard.
Is this a sequel to Doom 64? Two, is that commissary worker a salaried employee?
Want to talk about labor? And I want to talk about the end credit text to Doom 64 and how it makes certain implications about what the Doom guy did.
I don't know why more people don't love us.
I don't know mechanically that I'm super curious what they do with the mechanics because they could just make another one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that team has ambitions that are greater than just adding new levels, which is really what Doom 2 Hell on Earth was more levels for Doom. I mean, there was ambition there, but I'm really curious to see where they take the game from here. Like maybe it that's a game that would benefit from some open spaces,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're splitting off into levels, but I would love the idea of it's not open world necessarily because like tight level design is part of Doom to me, but that game included verticality and movement.
Sure.
So there's like more emphasis on that stuff I think would really benefit that game going forward. So
the way we talked about Ori at the beginning, I could imagine not fully in mm-hmm. that vein, but like you never have to touch the ground or
right.
for 30 seconds you could do incredible
yeah,
crazy
like
combat
totally.
Like
jetpacks
up
and
down and
shit
and,
like that
yeah.
there's a lot of stuff totally. They could do with a
that'd
new
cool,
so I'm really they're a very talented team and I'm excited to be excited about Doom.
Danielle.
Yes, Austin.
You've been...
Is your essay ready?
So
yes,
patient and so good.
I have been.
You are so excited about this.
I am extremely
excited. I am so excited to have been in the room when you get to see new Prey content announced and
yes.
released today.
I can't play it right now because I'm on a podcast right now.
I apologize.
I'm a professional.
Thank you.
I'm a professional. I'm here.
Prey Moon Crash.
Yes.
Tell me about Prey Moon Crash.
All right. I feel like
no,
I...
Me,
no,
what,
explain what it is.
Explain what it is.
Oh, well, gotcha. Yeah. All right, well, it's new DLC. I think people wanted story content, but it sounds like it is much more...
Just talk about what it is, and then we'll
okay,
see
okay.
If that side of the room...
If we're still talking?
If we're still talking. Let's
right,
start with
I understand.
What it is.
From what I understood, and I watched it twice, it sounds like it is a sort of chapter in the game, a new chapter in the game that takes place on the moon before the Typhon...
Typhoid.
You see, before typhoid fever, before things go completely to hell on the mm-hmm. station, because the Prey, the game, obviously took place on the station itself. The Transtar Corporations.
Yeah, we all beat this.
All right, that's right. Yes, some of us beat it better than others. I understand. Oh,
okay. I got all the. I did all the quests. I did all of them except the one that bugged and I couldn't finish it because it was broken.
I meant more like some of us fully explored this beautiful game and all
this thing is
turning
you into a monster.
You're not winning over the table. Austin was supposed to be neutral.
I was
starting to pick a
this
side.
This is a good argument, and you're undercutting it.
Fine. Takes place on the moon, and it sounds much more like a sort of procedurally systems-driven sort of chapter rather than necessarily
roguelike,
like a
right?
story
was that
chapter.
A term that they
used? They used the term roguelike on that stage, which was weird to
that
me.
Was
right?
Part of the trailer was, you know, it was like, or roguelike. You would see combat, you would see death, and it says simulation restart. You know, 45 and something, implying that you're repeating, there's a repetition to Moon Crash.
Yes. I think it sounds great and cool and good.
They also added New Game Plus.
Yes, there is a New Game Plus, which is awesome.
Some sort of survival mode.
Which sounded a lot like the way Alien Isolation maybe did
and
something.
And then
like
there was a third mode that they added.
They announced Typhon Hunter.
No, but there was something else. They added, it was like stuff that was like out today. It was included New Game Plus, Survival Mode, and something else. Whatever. They added some new modes
to
the game.
It may have just been Moon Crash itself.
And then there's Moon Crash, and then, there's the Typhoid competitive mode.
Yes,
which will have...
it's you versus five...
Well, because I... At this point...
You're in.
I'm in.
You're infected.
There's the VR stuff they're doing. It actually sounds really interesting. Like a VR single-player puzzle game.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That sounds great.
That sounds really fucking cool.
Some more details from the Steam page, because this is just up now. It's $20, which is... That's substantial.
A lot.
That's substantial.
Actually.
Yeah. You can get it with the original game for $40 total, which that makes that tip.
Mm-hmm.
I'd pay $40 for Prey. Even.
Oh, yeah.
100%. If you play Prey, $40 for Prey.
If you like one of the, if you like those kinds of games, you should 100%. Still play Prey.
Some of the stuff just was not in that thing. Like, I didn't know that you could play as multiple characters. You could unlock multiple characters who each have their own specialized upgradable skills.
Awesome.
Will you forge the path with the resource engineer Joan? Trade that wrench in for security officer Batia and his shotgun? Or will you choose the frail but gifted Andreas and his arsenal of psychic abilities? I like having multiple characters. And then, like you said, one of the things that's like, you're on a moon base, you're trying to get off, and every time you die, things in the world change. Enemy placement changes, loot placement changes.
And the example was like this staircase was on fire
and it was electrified.
Hazards.
And then it was like hazards can shut off different things, and maybe you're in this run you're not going to have what you need to deal with fire as early. In this other run you'll get the glue gun, and so that you can climb things or whatever, right? So
yes,
it looks interesting.
Yeah, all right.
I like system stuff. You know, I like system stuff. I like run based games.
Yes.
Rob has a bad look on his face. I feel like we have to let
Why
Rob...
Why don't you guys talk, and then
I'm more letting you two work
that's
it out.
Because you both have in the
Prey
past...
You both stood up, game of the year.
Yeah, you both stood up at attention.
Yes.
And then when I felt a certain... Like, I had my reaction to it, but I didn't consider that to be valid until I looked over at Rob. He had a... Well, you can explain.
Yeah, like during that presentation, it reminded me of like in the flashback in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy when like
Rob's
Trudeau and Hayden sort of look at each other and they sort of like toast each other at Christmas, but they already know they're moving in different directions and that maybe these are the last good times they're going to share.
We ain't got to dream no more.
Yeah.
That's from that.
Yeah, exactly. That was me and Danielle, I think, during that presser.
Rob!
No, it was because what I wanted was more Prey.
Yeah.
And for me, Prey is a narrative-driven immersive sim. And so what I had sort of been building in my head was like, oh shit, like we're going to learn more about like the U family and like what was Transtar up to on their moon base. Yeah. And like, how does that lay the groundwork for what happened on the space station? Or how does it follow up from what happened on the space station? And what we got instead was like pure mechanics divorced from that context, is at least how I'm interpreting it. And I'm less into that. And I can't completely get over that disappointment. Now, admittedly, that's like Prey ran out of things to do with its mechanics that it let you play around with. Like, eventually you could sort of break that game. I can see where this could be really fun if they've sort of rebalanced around the full arsenal of things you can do.
It seems like they've added some stuff as well.
But it's not the more of that same great experience I fell in love with last year. It's the expansion to Prey that is possible right now. It's and I death, hate living in that fucking
It's not
reality.
Death of the Outsider. Like, I thought what we were getting was like, Prey's not getting a sequel, so like, get over it, but we're going to fund the, like, last season, you get your closure, we're going to give you a little more of this thing, and it's a, you know, it's a year later, and it feels just like another mode to the game as opposed to closure
so
to the game.
It is like a pretty large, it's a pretty substantial size.
$20 is a lot of money.
I know it is. I know. I'm not saying it's not. It is. I'm saying it's like four levels big that they've said. It's like as big as four levels.
They four do, levels bigger than Fallout 3.
Four yeah, exactly. infinitely replayable is exactly one of those phrases that it splintered in my mind when I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know when I say infinitely replayable, one, that means that's like a lot of warning signs go off because I've heard that shit with No Man's Sky. I've heard that shit with so many games.
What does
that
mean?
What does that
exactly.
mean? But I've heard it a different way. And this is why I'm so curious about your argument, Danielle, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. you've made the case already that Prey, or you made the case that Prey is already incredibly replayable.
Completely.
What brings you back to it is the fact that even inside of this world that does not change, this world that does not have dynamic or procedurally generated or randomly rolled scenarios, you can milk so much from it. So tell me why this scratches that itch, despite not going into the story stuff that Rob is so excited about or would be so excited about, despite not talking a bit more about the alternate history stuff, etc.
Sure. I'll go into this saying I also would have loved a Death of the Outsider style
totally.
Story DLC. Absolute fucking lootly. I would have really enjoyed that. I think the story and the characters in the world of Prey are incredible. I've already talked about this at length, obviously, but I think they're great and I think it's wonderful. And part of why I kept going into that game was because of that window dressing, because I loved being in that world, because I loved everything it said, and because the architecture was so insanely great.
But you also just called it window dressing.
Yeah, I did. Right? Because, and here's my argument. Prey.
You fucking lawyer or something? Like, excuse me. You did
Your
just
Honor,
call it window
cover
dressing.
Cover her phone. Make her recite it from memory.
I'm just saying. No, no, no.
Here.
I'm saying.
Here.
No,
here.
No, no, no.
I'm
here.
Just fucking
she gave me the phone. She passed over the phone.
The phone
I wasn't
is
being
here.
A lawyer. I was saying, I was emphasizing. You're okay. You're saying I was examining the witness.
Yes, a little bit.
Objection.
No, no, no.
Which was it, Ms. Riendo?
If that
is it window dressing or is it aesthetic theming?
Wow.
No,
really?
Thanks.
Is it evocation of a place and time or is it just dressing on a sales
Objection,
window?
Your Honor, badgering the witness.
This is like those people who think all a movie is a script.
I agree.
And there's a lot to it. There's a lot to shot selection. There's a lot to editing. There's a lot to framing and composition and mise-en-scene. And all of it means something.
And yet Austin is against art.
I was setting her up. It's all window dressing if you boil it down.
He's giving me the pitch.
I was tossing the ball so she could spike it because this focuses on the other stuff.
Much like the Arboretum level where there are many baseballs in Prey.
The burrito?
The burrito
yes,
level.
Yes, the burrito level Yo. Where the typhoid and the goo gun okay. all come together. All right, look. Okay, here Canon. It is. Here's the argument in a nutshell. That Prey is an insanely great toy box. That it mm-hmm. is an incredible immersive sim
yeah.
because there are legitimately dozens of ways to go about not just a single problem or a single room or anything like that, but there are so many ways you can actually go about doing just about anything. Things that I didn't find in my first playthrough, like you could just upgrade your strength to such a degree that you never need to do hacking because you can just blow through things. You can actually just blow through like those heavy boxes and so mm-hmm. on and so forth. Or
that's
the fact
shit
that
healing the guts. You don't need to find them.
You don't need
you
them
can.
At all. You don't need that guy at all.
Oh, fuck the
guy. That guy. That
guy in the fucking
Richard
pipes.
Dalton. I'm pretty sure
that's
his name.
100%
is
Richard Dalton.
If it's not, it should be.
Richard Dalton is
the he's a lawyer
personification of the Bethesda press conference that wasted your fucking time.
Richard Dalton. Exactly.
He had the butter.
He had the butter the whole time. He was Brody. He wasn't Brian Jr.
Kroger!
I think this is a good case.
Yeah.
I genuinely do.
This is playing to those strengths. It is using the aesthetics, obviously. It's using, I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of story to this. There's going to be some sort of story.
I hope. I can't assume that. I really can't. All right. Because
they really showed none of it.
Because they showed none
and
of it.
And they said nothing about a story.
And because the Steam page for it does have a subset section that does say story, and it's like, this guy's stuck on the station, and he's running
the kind of
whatever.
Story that Alien Isolation's DLC that was along these lines, at least that sort of survivor lines, had a premise, it had some characters, it had some...
Context.
Right.
Totally.
Yes.
Okay. This feels like context based on what this is. Now, yes. I hope
there... We'll get home, and then we'll find out, actually, like... There's some cool narrative shit happening
there
here.
There could be.
Because there's no reason you couldn't do that
over
in a roguelike thing.
100%.
And then I'm willing to like jump in on this and like
I think
see.
So I'm willing to do it even without, because here's the thing that I'm excited about.
Yes.
That I didn't have what you have here, right? Which is you've been playing through Prey over and over again for a year. And you push yourself to try new builds.
Yes.
I find a build that works well, and then I break the game with it, and then I'm done. I play through because I want to absorb the story content. I want to absorb the world. There are games that are built in such a way to encourage me to play with the sandbox. It's why I love Far Cry 2 so much. It's why I love Dragon's Dogma, because I love trying out new builds.
And the Breach does really well,
actually. Yeah. The Breach does that super well, because it's like, oh, I want to try these different combinations of different mechs. So it does happen sometimes. But Prey didn't do it for me that way.
Okay.
What this mode does have is... characters which will have different traits, which will and random loot spawns and stuff like that will force me to break out of the same cycle, the same loop that I just did again and again and again, because it dealt with every problem that I had. We were just talking about how I don't like Red Faction Guerrilla as much as most people, because it doesn't encourage me to actually use a lot of the tools it has, because I found a system that just dealt with 90% of the problems. So anytime that a game like this can turn me into a Daniel Riendo and say, hey, actually, all you have is the wrench, the glue gun, and this one psychic ability that you completely ignored because you were doing the other one, that sounds good to me to force me to play with some of those systems.
It's a really good toy box.
I thought Red Faction Guerrilla's model of labor and anti-state insurgency was pretty juvenile. That was
100%. 1,000%.
But, you know, what did just occur to me is, and this is me arguing against myself, you know what was cool in BioShock 2? The mode where it was just like, defend the little sisters.
Oh,
where it was like
God,
that part of the game. It was just like, okay, here's like one of the more like systemically complicated interactions, events that happens within the game. We're just going to make that an entire mode, and you just do it again and again. And I'm like, that was cool. That worked. And that was way smaller scale than anything Prey is going to do.
Can I counter my own argument to talk about why that appeals to me in a way that this doesn't? I love the world of Prey. I love the characters of Prey. I love... in abstract, the abilities of Prey and even some of the loops. I love recycling things. Mm-hmm. I love finding resources and turning them into new things for myself. I didn't like playing Prey. I liked the puzzles in this abstract sense. I liked finding solutions to them. I never liked executing the solutions. It just, and I'm not saying other people shouldn't have had good times with it, but I didn't like I physically was not enjoying. It didn't feel good to win fights. It didn't feel good to shoot the dart gun at the button to open the door. It didn't feel good to make a glue gun ladder to climb up and do the jumping puzzle to get into the grate. And like, that is why, whereas in BioShock 2, the Fending the Little Sisters thing is like, oh, this is the core competency of the game, is the action, is like the action sandboxes, and we can build a mode around that. I might go home and play this Prey mode and be like, oh, actually, you know what? There's enough here that's ticking it's flip, you know, whatever it's doing. It's scratching the itch, and I'm enjoying it. But I worry that core stuff, it's like, I shot so many things with that pistol. I solved so many puzzles by using whatever weird... I found so many mimics using the psychic eye thing to reveal mimics. And it never felt good to me. And I just want... I wish that any doing stuff felt good. So when I say I'm split on this, I genuinely mean it. Because I think your argument is so good for why this is a good way to experience an immersive sim. I would love this immersive sims, this mode in other immersive, in Dishonored. Are you fucking kidding me? Where I love the feeling of jumping. I love the feeling of blinking. I love the feeling of using all the new abilities. I would love a mode like this to just go through Death of the Outsider stuff. Let me go through that bank 1,000 times and let the bank be different each time. And let me like deal with different shit because the toys are so fun for me to play with there. Yeah. And maybe if I play with the toys more, if I play with new toys, maybe I'll find the ones that work for me in Prey.
I have two very small supporting arguments as well.
Absolutely. In
this. One being, this might be the thing that shows people that that's what that game actually was.
Sure.
Like playing with these ridiculous toys that are incredibly fun and really varied and awesome. And the other one being, you're talking about Bioshock 2. I just played Bioshock 1 again, and I talked about it on the podcast. The challenge rooms that they sort of added in, that they just sort of threw into the PS3 version that are now in the sort of collector's edition, whatever it is that I played, were incredible and fun. And they were clearly, a ton of development time did not go into them, right? There were sort of three challenge rooms, two of which were sort of scenario puzzles, and they were incredible, and I loved them. And the last one I didn't think I would like so very much was just combat, but it was all different scenarios of combat. Just spider splicers in this area, just big daddies, or just a certain combination of enemies in each sort of room. And that was so much fun, and it made me realize, again, also, like, oh, I really like playing with these toys, and I really like being encouraged to play with these toys. So that's part of why I saw this and I didn't immediately balk, like no story content. I was like, oh, that's a Bioshock challenge room, but with maybe some more resources pumped into it. And that was awesome.
That is fair.
So there you go.
All right. Good Prey conversation. That's going to do it for us. No, it's not, because we still have so much more to go through.
But you got to take me home.
There's still more between. We're not even there yet, because we still have Wolfenstein, Atomic Blonde Edition.
Oh, yes.
Atomic Blonde's Edition, because it's twins. Wolfenstein Youngblood, good name. Takes place in the 1980s. You were playing BJ and Anya's twin daughters.
At least 20, 25 years. They said it's set in the 80s.
I don't know. There's a sign somewhere that says like a year.
Where does
it looked German, but that I realized.
No, where does the new Colossus end? What year?
62, maybe?
That was after that. Because it was like.
Yeah, because it's very like, especially with the Black Beatles Liberation and the characters are much more later. It's 70s,
either way,
isn't
60s,
it?
Right?
No, it's 60s.
Like late 60s somewhere? 68. I think it's 68. I'm pretty sure.
That would be
appropriate
historically in some interesting ways.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the 1980s. It has to be longer than that, because they're not.
They're in their 20s.
They're not 12.
Yeah, they're not like kids.
Yeah. So either it's later in the 80s or that game ends in the early 60s. Sure. Regardless, they're adults. And they're here to fucking punch some Nazis. Oh, I did not expect Pete Hines to say fuck up some Nazis.
Yeah, Pete.
And also continue our mission to, what is it? Let you kill Nazis on every possible platform.
I'm here for it. I will play more Wolfenstein. I really liked it. I don't know what the scope of that thing
they pitched
is.
It as a solo plus a co-op experience, but the one that you could play on your own, but like it was meant to be a co-op thing, but it's coming out in 2019, and certainly see more than an expansion. They put out 3 DLCs for the new Colossus, which were not particularly good, so I never went back to
I can imagine this being a Death of the Outsider style. Sizable, but not full length.
Yeah, something to put out in between the proper sequel, that they've said to kind
of.
So now
I'm curious, because if they're that far ahead in the future, what is next?
They said this is pushing the story forward, so I wonder if this will then function as like a bridge, right? So it's like this comes out in 2019, and then 2020, is the
finale of
Machine Games brings that whole thing home. And it'd be cool if Youngblood, I'd love to see a huge jump in time. Like, we can leave BJ behind. Totally. Like that. I don't think there's a reason he has to be part of the third one. They should bring his story. They can bring his. Like, if Youngblood is sort of like we find out what happened to BJ without playing BJ a third time. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, maybe one of the sisters dies or something. And like that's. I don't know.
Or they don't have to. They could both live.
They're both awesome.
They're both around.
Yeah. Where did that second armored suit come from?
I don't know. Good question. Yeah. They fucking dug one out. That's true. We'll see.
I'm ready for more of Machine Games. Make whatever you want to make. I didn't get my Evil Within DLC. Where's that?
Right, totally. There's an Elder Scrolls Online, werewolf DLC coming. That's the next big thing there. And a big just, love letter to Elder Scrolls Online fans and stuff. Yep. They're which is cool. I always want to play more of that game. I just,
I've heard people like, well, you said people like it, and then I have heard that game makes a lot of money. So,
right. So between the two, there's
that means more
probably because people like it, right? That's the, yeah. I mean, right. People aren't being tricked into playing it.
Totally, 100%. Right. No, exactly. So they finally did it. They finally told people what Fallout 76 was after weeks of teasing and repeating the same really kind of bold.
Four times as big as Fallout 4.
That's such a
weird way to frame it. Twice. The Microsoft press conference and then at their own
press conference. I'm still not happy about that particular framing of it. But they showed
it. What does that even fucking mean?
It means nothing given what that game is.
It's a bigger box.
There's not.
Oh.
Colonies cool. out there already. Do you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean that there are four megatons.
What's in the box?
There's not gonna, you know what I mean? Like, anyway. Fallout 76, co-op survival, or no, multiplayer survival game. Mm-hmm. You can play with your friends. It can be played co-op. There will always be other players from what we can see. It doesn't look like there is a mode where it's just you and
it's
your friends.
It's online only.
It's online only. It is online only.
But specifically, it's not thousands or hundreds of players. It's like
dozens.
Dozens.
Which
like
is
under 100.
Which is
100%. Right? So if you think
Battle Royale, is this a slow Battle Royale?
If you think 100, I mean, if you think 100 players on a map four times the size of Fallout 4,
yep. I love that.
Because then it means running into a player is it's a major event.
Right.
In a way that, if you're using Battle Royale as a framework, like that encourages tension and combat at a fast pace. This would be like you could conceivably play for a dozen hours and never see someone based on, but I don't know how.
Yes. No, imagine if you're in like your own holler and like building up a camp and you realize like somebody's just over the ridge, like doing the same thing, but you've never seen each other. You just, yeah. like,
right.
But they're like moving up the hill toward like your ridge line and suddenly it's a whole like weird neighbor thing. Oh man.
But I don't know how shit. This game, like, does this game encourage emotes. Tension or, I mean, like,
so
I'm
no.
saying, like, how does it encourage players? Does it encourage players to move towards each other? Or is it all incidental and then it's just what happens?
Here's where I feel like there's some degree of incidentality, which is Todd used the term softcore survival.
Mr. Howard.
Mr. Howard, mm-hmm. if you're nasty.
Big Rod Todd.
Excuse me. Sorry, what was that?
Big Rod Todd.
Big Rod Todd.
Yeah.
No, he showed up with the last two announcements.
He did. That was it. He wasn't.
That's when Big Rod Todd was
really
anointed.
When you die, you don't lose anything.
Right.
That's such a departure mm-hmm. from games like Rust or Ark, other games that are in this vague shared space of kind of multiplayer crafting survival games. Lots of showing players working together, posing together for a photo mode shot, fighting.
Music.
Playing music together, which is like, I'm dead serious that that's appealing to me in a real way. After playing so much Sea of Thieves, you're playing Starbound where you could do that. I love playing music in multiplayer games like this. Building stuff together, lots of building. The big pitch. The pitch in this game is, it is a Fallout game in which it's 20 years after the bombs drop. Maybe more than that, but it's I don't remember the time.
It hasn't been as long as it probably should have been.
Right. The doors open. You go out to West Virginia to recolonize West Virginia. Manifest destiny. It is the tricentennial or whatever, right? It's the 2076. And you're going out to bring back America, goddammit. Plantations and all.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk a little bit about the aesthetics and what's presented in this game. Like, because here's the thing that makes me uncomfortable about Fallout 76 a little bit. From the presentation, mm-hmm. the opening, like, the guy in the, well, it's not Brotherhood of Steel armor because they don't exist yet, but, like,
the U.S. Army armor, right.
Watching the bombs fall and just, like, you know, dying in the fallout and getting covered over with the earth. But does this game realize that that version of America were the bad guys? Like, it was a...
Maybe, but we not... It feels like there are less vectors than ever to communicate that in a game like this. So, again, it's a survival crafting game. You're the first vault to open, which means that outside of, theoretically, some ghoul colonies and some super mutant camps, there aren't other people out in the world. Mm-hmm. Because as far as we understand the mythos and the rule set of the setting of Fallout, the people in the world came out of the vaults and created, you know, kind of asymmetrically in a number of waves and slowly filtered into the rest of the world, as far as I remember. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe there were some other private bunkers and things like that.
I think some of the people in the American West, at least, like Shady Sands and stuff, they have no recollection of any vault dwellers.
Okay.
Like, so there are people who lived.
Okay.
But...
Totally. So maybe... But from what we've seen, we didn't see quest givers. Part of the pitch was everyone that you meet is another real person, which means you're not going to find Megaton or Diamond City or New Vegas, obviously. You're not going to find these sorts of locations of quest givers.
But there are quests.
Right, but that can mean a lot of things.
That's what I... Right, but I guess I will say that is one remaining question. Mm. They answered a lot of questions. Right,
they did not...
One thing was that, like, they, you know, Todd Howard, you know, came out and said, you can play this solo. You don't have to play with friends. Like, we're clearly encouraging you to play with other people, but you can play this by yourself. There are quests for you. There's a story to follow. And I'm just wondering... Just because you say there's a story to follow and a quest to do, what does that mean?
Right. And so when I say that there's less vectors to do the sort of critical look at what America was, the way that Fallout's 1 through New Vegas did, 3 less than the others, let's say, is that there's no Tenpenny Tower, right? In Fallout 3, one of the early quests that you have is you locate this kind of last bastion of true human civilization, in which it is an old hotel called run by a guy named Mr. Tenpenny, who hates ghouls, even the ones who are fully, you know, basically humans, just with who have been damaged by the radiation and the bomb blasts. Who like wants you to clear out local sapient ghoul colonies, ghoul like civilizations, communities, and then ends with you nuking someone. And it's very clearly framed as this like deep, I mean, it's framed that way because it's like negative 100 karma because this game has a karma system. And it's like, this is a bad thing that you're doing. Hey, you're repeating the sins of the past. Hey, look, you could have, we could have built them to look like anything. We made them look like us, right? Like you could have made a wasteland is an opportunity, not just a place to re-embed the same failures that were already in place. And is there a way to do that in a game that doesn't have NPCs as far as we've seen in there outside of
Fallout 76 is also explicitly being like, but nukes are cool.
Right. Yeah. Like, there was someone on Twitter that like explicitly pointed out like the contradiction of like Fallout 3 Megaton is like, of anything, any decision you make in that game is like communicates a morality about like the ethics of the wasteland. Right. It's like, you know, and instead in 76,
it's like be a scavenger.
Nukes are a reward explicitly. There's no, at least from far as we know, like there's not like something you get for not getting the nuke and deciding to not bomb somebody.
Well, like,
it's all about 76 is all about nuking and then like you get better loot. Nuking is rewarded with better loot.
And one of the funny things there is like, is nuking one of the, this is me asking, is nuking the one way to make someone actually suffer in this game? Because there's no permanent loss otherwise.
I mean, that's where your head went immediately.
Well, yeah, like, is there...
And you were into it.
Well, like, if the game... You know, these games inherently have, like, a measure of, like, trolling and griefing because there's player interaction.
It's the first thing that they show before that... Like, it's all about cooperation. It's immediately one player killing another player by shooting them in the head.
So it's like, are they going to prevent you from, like, hitting player bases? Like, is there going to be a way where the things that you can bomb are, like, identify all locations on a map as opposed to just, I'm going to drag it over to X because we scouted out this fucking camp and we're going to blow it up. Because that would seem to go, that would shock me if they're going to let you just blow up someone's camp they spent the last 100 hours building.
Right.
But like, they should let you blow up the camp.
Or like, is it just going to be a thing where it's like, you know, one of the things they said is, oh, you can move your camp anywhere on the map. Like you kind of just have like a camp robot or like a camp workstation, and you just take that, you like move that anywhere else on
which
the map,
which is cool,
which is like, as someone who enjoyed the building in Fallout 4 for its own sake,
right,
not because it tied into anything else in that game,
right,
well, like that's what that game was missing, was some way for that stuff to matter in a real way. I'm excited about the idea of like, oh yeah, I could build like a cool, like a kind of terraced hilltop like multi-tiered like camp and like little mini town, or I could go into the valley, or I could go over here near this waterfall. Like that stuff does excite me. So you could build all sorts of cool shit in that environment from what we've seen. And I already like it just because you can do it. And I really like the notion of being like, man, this place fucking sucks. I'm going to get out of Dodge. These people are moving in nearby. This whole neighborhood went to shit. I'm getting out.
Robot.
Yeah, robot. I'm moving over here near the weird, in the weird city or whatever. Environments look good.
Pretty looking game.
Pretty looking game. They said new lighting model, new rendering model, new third thing that I've already forgotten.
Ray casting.
New ray casting.
Sure. Why not?
Ray's Howlin' casting.
Ray's Howlin' Ray's.
Howlin' Ray's casting.
And I think here's the other thing. It's like, so I think that the kind of thematic stuff that we've been going in on is serious for me as a fan of the series and as a fan of like games that aren't just like rah-rah America, rah-rah, don't think about things. But I will also say that as a pitch, going back to this question of like, how did you sell this thing? How did you explain this complicated change? This felt like such a contrast to Anthem, which we talked about yesterday about how does a company that's known for doing one thing convince their fans that just because they're going to go do this other thing, they're not leaving them behind. And in fact, that this new thing might be actually pretty good and they should give it a shot. With Anthem, that they made the pitch to fans of Destiny likes, fans of The Division. They were making a pitch that was
and
like...
And BioWare fans were left going, okay,
who what can about, I kiss?
Who can I kiss? Where's the? What are the characters? Who are the factions? What are all of that other stuff? Like, there's so many reasons why you like BioWare games.
We've had two reveals, and neither of those things are clear.
Right, exactly. And now there's a Twitter thread about it, right? Like,
and it's and like crucially, they had... You know, BioWare lacks this without a sort of a Casey Hudson, right? Like, Todd Howard is like this very recognizable face for Bethesda. People 100%. Like know who he is. He's charismatic. Like, he can be funny. Like, and he, but at least he's a cipher. Like, he's a symbol for.
I mean, we skipped part of this. Is like, people know Todd Howard well enough that people know that Todd Howard bringing Skyrim onto every platform is a joke enough for them to do this very funny Alexa bit.
Michael Keegan Key.
Right, with Michael Keegan. Right, exactly. So, like, that helps a lot. And so, but like Anthem or BioWare has Casey back. They had,
or they could bring someone else.
They had
like
people
Todd,
up on the
Todd
stage.
Is very good at this, but there's no reason that someone else couldn't have functioned in the same capacity. Todd is special because of the history that Bethesda has and like the success they've had in the last like 10 to 15 years. But there's no reason a different person could. You just needed someone to come out, be honest with an audience, walk them through in like.
It's the walking through that would be even that is it, right?
Todd literally walked around up and down a stage.
He did, spoke for a while
to set. He set up. 100%. Here's what this thing is, and now we've got these vignettes, these little doc, like you know, these little snippets. It's going to show you, and then I'm going to explain.
And I'm going to explain it,
and then we're
going
to take a pause,
yep.
And we're going to move on to the next thing.
And that was it.
And
was
we're building out the pillars of this game at the same time. Like, all right, you've got a lot of like, even just saying you have a lot
you
of
have
questions.
A lot of questions.
You can play this game solo, and like you can do it on your own.
Yep.
And like answering a fundamental question that people have about that game, even if that's probably like a poor way to play it, it's answering it saying you can do it.
Totally.
And it's just answering these very basic questions that put a framework in mind for people to think about what this game is and start answering for themselves, is this for me or not?
Yep.
Because then there's a lot of people, even with Anthem, are like, I love everything BioWare has ever done. And even though I don't really like Destiny, I trust BioWare, so maybe I'll go on this journey with them. But there's still not enough information for you to make a calculated decision on whether you're going to go down that path with them. And I think at the end of today, even though you have questions about the story, 100%. And the crossing step, I think you can come to a fairly, and there's going to be a beta that also was helpful to say like, yo, come check this thing out for free. And if you hate it, then just move on. But like, so they answered all of these things that put in a framework for Fallout fans who. Like, I want Fallout 5. This is not Fallout 5.
Right.
But now I know what it is.
I wish they had done any of this 2 weeks ago when pre-orders opened on this thing.
Yes. Because
there are going to be people who are like, oh, new Fallout, pre-order, disengage.
Sure.
And then that game comes out or they find out in however many months.
The build-up has been bad.
It's bad.
But if you were to...
The actual pitch was good.
Right. I think for a sizable portion of the audience, like, this may be their first actual encounter with the game. And if you were to Google it, this is what you're going to come up with in the months ahead. And, like, this is, like, a very reasonable, thoughtful explanation of, like, what would people ask if we were making a new Fallout that was different than what we'd done before?
I also think there's probably a best of both worlds from between the multi-person thing that Anthem tried to do and then this, in which... you don't. It's great to have Todd. People know Todd. It would be cool to have someone who wasn't Todd who was working on this game come out and be like, "Hey, I'm building the
probably camp stuff." More focused on Starfield than 100%, he is on this game. To have but he's a trust.
But like,
if he came out and he's like, "Yo, let me set this up. Now let me introduce
so and so
the director
and
of this
game." And then that person comes out and goes back to Todd, and then Todd can throw it back. There's a version of that in which you have a story person, you have a design for a systems person, blah blah blah. That would be great. But then there's the other half of this, which is the other reason why you have the fans, the tradition, the person who's like, man, this isn't Fallout 5. Right. Man, this is
like the end of this pitch, you could have said, this game probably isn't for me. Like, I probably won't play this game outside of like the streams we do, right? Like, and I'll probably have a ton of fun on the streams that we do, but it's not going to be the game that like at 10 o'clock, I've got 2 hours to myself. Like, I'm probably not going to play Fallout 76 unless it turns out the story stuff is more substantive than what's been pitched. But like, if the way it was not emphasized here gives me an inkling that probably it's not, it's there, but it's not what I'm looking for from a Bethesda Game Studio game. And so if you come to the end of this and go, shit, like some people, a lot of BioWare fans are probably feeling right now, like they're not making the game that I want. They didn't come out and say, what are we doing with Dragon Age?
Right. And so that's the thing is and
Bethesda did the thing that the EA should have done.
Which is like, hey, you know you're excited. We know that you want to hear more. Like, we don't really have more right now. Here is just Elder Scrolls 6. Here is Starfield, a game that's been an open secret for so long that it's wrapped back around to being like...
Maybe it's actually fake.
Fake, yeah.
And then there was like a mobile trademark that's like, fuck, maybe it's a mobile game.
Right. Starfield real.
Starfield is real.
You said Big Rod Todd.
Big Rod Todd.
You
ready to
go to space?
Oh my god, I'm excited about this space stuff. It was a little bit of a fuck you to Mass Effect.
Oh yeah.
I feel like 100%. that was a real...
The sun
look
coming
at these
over
globes.
The, yeah.
The beautiful celestial globes, you know.
I'm super curious about what that is. I'm very excited about going to a new fictional world.
Yeah.
A new proper nouns. They get me. I like proper nouns. Tell space. Me about whatever... Zoglorgs.
Bibliotechnician.
Zoglorgs and bibliotechnicians.
Who are the Zoglorgs?
We'll find out in Starfield.
A race of bibliotechnicians.
That's my point. I don't know yet. That's what makes it exciting for me. I know who the Elcor are. I don't know what the Anthem of Creation is yet. I like proper nouns. I'm that dude. You know, No Goblin, the studio? They're like, no more All Goblin. Austin Walker.
Oh, shit.
So like, that's that. The fact that they were able to say, hey, and also, we don't have news on when these are coming in any way, but we have new stuff for people who like single player.
Here's the
RPGs.
Next like 5 to 7 years of this company. Like who knows?
Who knows?
Like we have no sense of the scale if these are in product. You know, they're probably more in the pre-production, like early production phase. Starfield probably ahead of Elder Scrolls. That they were rolled out in a very specific way. Todd has said in the past that. They had several major Bethesda game studios games in production, and that Elder Scrolls was a game that required new technology for them even to think about doing it. Also, as we were talking privately while we were watching the stream, I think Elder Scrolls Online, as sort of a persistent, endless sort of Elder Scrolls game, fundamentally reshapes what even an Elder Scrolls game would be. Where if like Elder Scrolls Online exists, what even is a new Elder Scrolls game? Like, so I don't know, but it was a really it was a really heartwarming way to like communicate to your fans, like, "Hey, what's up? Here's what we're doing." Because it's also the antithesis of like how like Bethesda also whatever you like. I didn't like Fallout 4 at all, but I still trust that studio to the degree that like when they say we're making Starfield, we're making Elder Scrolls, like I trust that they are, and I trust they are going to make those games with like. Whereas, like, you know, look at Microsoft and, like, Scalebound and stuff like that. Like, these days, it's like, when you announce a game, like, I don't necessarily trust that game is going to come out. But, like, I trust that, like, they're going to ship both of those games. Maybe a long time. May take a while, but, like, they're going to make those games.
And Rob had a good point, right? Which is, you announce them, can't leak them.
Is that not you? That wasn't me.
Who said that?
No, that was a guy on Twitter.
Shout out to Twitter.
Thank you, Twitter.
Guy on Twitter who said.
Thank you, Twitter.
Are you on Twitter?
I am, at Rob Zachney on Twitter.com.
Shouts to Bowen for letting us use the track. Miss you.
Oh, thank God.
Joel. Thank you, Joel.
Elder Scrolls Blades is the last thing that came in between these. Mobile game.
Yeah, it's a mobile
game. I mean, we should have known something was up when It's like, you're not going to end a mobile game. You folks are too smart. Yeah. But even that mobile game presentation, I'm not going to play that game. But it was a smart presentation of...
I feel like a bad person.
Uh-huh.
Because I was like, hell yeah, Elder Scrolls Fallout Shelter. And it wasn't that. And I was like, fully featured RPG. Mm. But then I was like, I can play it in portrait mode on the bus.
Oh.
Ooh.
But that was, again, 100%. That was like... That was such a relatable
100%.
Moment, like, that showed both that there was, it shows the attention to detail.
Also, he made a jerk-off joke.
He did.
Yeah, he did.
Todd got dirty.
One hand, play with one hand. He is Big Rod Todd, also known as Hot Bod Todd, Funny Man Todd, according to Danica. So, he's a man who wears many hats.
I feel he like does. Big Rod Todd is a fetch.
I like it. It just rolls off the tongue. Big Rod Todd.
Yep.
Metal Wolf Chaos. That's the only thing you need to know about Devolver.
All right,
yeah,
Devolver.
We don't need to
happened.
Talk about Devolver.
Metal Wolf Chaos.
Metal Wolf Chaos.
That thing was weird.
I'll say this about Devolver. I think that thing would have worked better if the day's press conferences hadn't been mostly so good.
Right.
Like
100%.
That's actually true.
Last
if this
year,
was just after EA.
If this had been after E3, I'd have been like, fucking nailed them.
It would have worked.
Oh, shoot, because that was a better response to EA than any other.
Yeah.
Totally. Could have
worked.
It was weird. It was a weird one. I wish that lady hadn't gotten shot so many times.
I like that actress, though.
She was good.
She's rad as hell.
Yeah, she was funny.
She was funny. Threw some stuff there. Metal Wolf Chaos is real. It's coming.
Yeah.
FromSoft.
Later this year.
Is that the only FromSoft? Is that it? Were you out of FromSoft? Are you seeing FromSoft tomorrow?
You know.
I can't imagine there's more FromSoft.
What's more? Well, exactly
now there's... That's some scuttlebutt going around. And maybe there's more games that are. Sony had said there's going to be four games at the.
That is what
conference.
They said.
And now it sounds like there might be.
I've heard something else. I've definitely heard other stuff there.
Yeah,
it's in the time since I
think there are four games.
Sony games,
but then there are trailers breaking up.
Four
things.
Games.
Yeah.
Got
four
it.
Games.
Four games.
Four.
Interactive entertainment.
Video games.
See, that's
God,
okay.
They're not words anymore. They're just sounds.
Games.
This is day negative one.
Typhoid.
Goo gun.
Typhoid boy.
Typhoid. Gotta get that typhoid.
Typhoid Todd.
Scum didn't
Juju's
look
gonna
great
be on the show
Scum
tomorrow.
Didn't look great. I mean, Scum looks... It's one of those. It's one of those survival... It's like super intense. We saw it at PAX... For like 2 seconds.
What if PUBG was Quap? Almost is how it feels.
That's
like.
Great.
Wow.
What if PUBG was Quap? Put it on the box, ship it. There was a third thing there, and I already forgot what it was. That makes me feel bad. Oh, it was that thing with the guns. Pedro.
Yeah.
Something.
They didn't really show Serious Sam, did they?
I didn't see it at all.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's here. I'm seeing that game. So.
Cool. Have fun.
That's cool. Yeah.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us. Yeah. We have to edit this podcast.
I got
to
edit this.
We will be back tomorrow with more. Tomorrow's another big day.
Oof.
Less no. big in terms of having to leave the house, which is nice.
Well, except for I got to leave the house.
Yeah, well,
pretty early.
We tagged off. And Rob was out of the house at like 8. What time did you leave this morning?
7:15.
Can we admit a thing, Rob? At like 9, like 8:45, we were getting ready to leave.
So you got up, you went in the shower, I went for a 20-minute run, come back, and I woke up this morning at a little before 7, and then was like just kind of futzing on my phone in my room. And I got up, and I never heard you leave. You left like a mouse.
Like a fucking ninja.
Yeah.
New FromSoft game. Tenchu Rob. Rob Tenchu Zachney. There it is.
There it is.
Can you get this big man across this hardwood floor without waking his housemates?
Uh-huh. Well, we were like, wait a second. Did Rob? Oh, no. Did Rob set the alarm right? Is Rob still on East Coast time?
It was 8:40, and I was like, what time was that event? Was it like 8:30?
And we looked.
And it was 8:15. Yeah. Well, no, it was 8:15.
And I was like, Patrick?
I would have been knocked on your door for a while. And I was like, how many knocks before I go in? And I settled on 10 knocks.
And he shouted. He was like,
he's gone!
It was very good. We were happy.
Quick thing about the 8:15 appointment.
Yeah.
This is a good move by Patrick. A couple weeks ago, he's like, Rob, do you want to see Ubisoft's Games of E3 get hands-on? It's a good thing. Nothing's really been announced. Do you want to do that? I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. And you're like, cool. 8:15 in the morning work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bodied. Tomorrow is Square Enix, Ubisoft, PC gaming show, which I'm curious about because that's been slowly getting better and better each year.
I've heard there should be some cool stuff there. Keep expectations in check, but there should be like some legit games.
And then Sony. So we'll watch all of those. We'll be tweeting about them all day. You follow me at twitter.com/Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At the one prey fan, at Danielle Ara.
Wow. Yeah, we used to be two, and then.
Sorry, Rob's I'm the last one. I'm the last one standing. Like it's fine.
1.4
Oh, thank you.
0.5 I liked that game, Patrick Klepek at Patrick Klepek.
Sure.
That's right. Right.
Yes.
Rob Zachney.
It was an aesthetic choice as much as a moral one.
At Rob Zachney on Twitter. Follow everything we do, twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypoint. Scoops. At Scoops. We should get some ice cream.
We're going to go with some ice cream tomorrow.
That sounds good. Chinatown Scoops. Follow us right here on Periscope also. Make sure you get those notifications. We'll be back. Also, go listen to the full podcast version of this. We should just record that other thing we want to record tomorrow.
Dude, you are not doing it tonight. I don't have the energy.
Me either.
I won't make it.
All right. So we'll be back tomorrow with more. Until then, shout out to both. Let's lose track. Missy of BP Panel Machine. waypoint.com/BOEN.
Be good and be good at it and play Prey. It's so great.
$40, $20 if just want to play Prey.
Yeah.
Peace.
Take me home.
Country Roads. I belong.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.